Imagine what Football Folk is doing. Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
Hey, as a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
You just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, fam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Sam Monson here as ever. Still no Steve, though, so we have a second crossover show, this time with Austin Gale from Tailgate.
I'm excited to be on the show. I'm excited to take Steve's place. Mm-hmm. I appreciate you having me on every time I'm on this podcast, so thanks again.
How's the chair?
The chair is fine.
You and Steve in that chair is a very different tonnage.
The chair is fine. The chair is thanking me. You know, I know Steve is pushing three bills these days, especially coming off of PTO.
Wow. One of the chairs in here, might not be that one, maybe we'll change it out, but one of these stools in here, when you sit on it, you can feel that Steve has been sitting it.
Yeah, like I think we put that one aside.
Yeah, it's like the, you know, the, what are the pneumatics in it?
Yeah.
You know, like nice air cushioning suspension. Not in that one.
Yeah.
That one's seen some things, and it's not happening.
I think the weight limit when we bought these chairs was very close to where Steve is at right
I've
now.
Told this to people before. I cannot put my mind in the body of a person that has to think about that stuff.
No,
like, I buy a chair. I don't, like, I assume.
It's the first thing he said when we bought them.
Like, I literally just assume that the chair can sit me in it, right? That's the purpose of the chair. Why would it be any different? That guy has to look at it and be like, oh, I need a chair to, like, you know, sit up next to the kids' softball game.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, what's the weight limit? 250?
Sorry. True.
We got to go higher. We got to get the reinforced chair. I can't be sitting in that.
When we bought these for last year's draft show, the first thing he said is like, what's the weight limit? I'm like, oh, fuck.
I like it. What are we, like 2 minutes into the show and you've already dropped the F-bomb?
It was a slight one. We're fine.
People knew where you were going, though. People knew where it still counts. If you got to throw a dollar somewhere, that's a dollar.
Yeah.
Anyway, last time you were on this show, or maybe not last time you were on the show, but this time a year ago, we mm-hmm. did the same very show, you and I, and it cooked.
Yeah.
We did Fatal Flaws for all 32 NFL teams. And you rightly brought up, when I suggested we do it again this year,
mm-hmm.
that the feedback last year was pretty consistent, that half the league was like, their quarterback sucks, they're not winning. So we're not doing that this year. We're going to come up with a non-quarterback reason your team won't win the Super Bowl.
So I only have – so I did – purposefully, only two quarterback weaknesses.
Yeah, we'll like reference when your quarterback is obviously a problem,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
but we won't linger on that, and we will actually come up with a non-quarterback reason you're not going to win.
Yeah.
But that's going to be the show. So we're going to do Fatal Flaws for all 32 teams. Order is always controversial, mm-hmm. right? You being on the show, you were like, well, let's start in the West.
Yeah.
The West people get pissed off.
I'm a West guy.
When we go last, and you're a West guy. The West Coast bias against the West Coast people. So we're going to start not just with the West, but the AFC West. And we're going to go reverse way around the compass. So West, South, East, and North for each conference.
I love it.
And we've got to get a move on because there's 32 teams.
Let's do it.
But before we get into anything, we've got to tell you about Western and Southern. The title sponsor of the PFF NFL podcast, the guys with the plaque on the wall, that's taking it to a whole new level. Where am I? Sorry, I was on Tailgate podcast. I was like, hang on. It's telling me that our title sponsor is Sunday. That's not right. Wait, it still is right.
What? Figure it out.
I did.
Find a way.
It says the presenting sponsor is Get Sunday.
Yeah, Get Sunday, brother. Oh, well, Tyler's already got Western. Just give Western Southern a
little
credit.
I don't see Get Sunday with a plaque on the wall. That's all I'm saying.
It's true.
Now I've got to like ad-lib a Western
Find a
Southern
way.
Read.
Find a way.
Look, this is why.
Select the right money moves.
So,
that's all I've got. What is that play that's going on? Number 87 is like going to hurdle and throw the ball, or is he extending for the pylon?
That's bad ball security is what that is, as opposed to bad financial security, which you can get fixed if you go to westernsouthern.com. There was a /, but I don't remember what it was.
Good.
westernsouthern.com. Go there. They'll love you for it. Sign up for whatever it is they're selling. We'll appreciate it, and then I'll find a better sponsor read later on.
I love it.
Is that good enough?
I think that was perfect.
All right. Sweet. No one will know. Connor, you probably don't want to send that one.
No, don't send that one.
Anyway, AFC West, that starts us off with Denver. The Denver Broncos, newly minted with quarterback Russell Wilson, but what is their fatal flaw still?
I feel that the fatal flaw for the Broncos is, and I think I'm going to get a lot of hate for this. I think I'm going to get a lot of hate for living, but I think the fatal flaw is the newness at quarterback and coach. I bringing in Russell Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett, obviously two new members of the Denver Broncos, and expecting it to gel immediately in a division where, you know, it's going to be very difficult to finish first or second with the Chargers and Chiefs, obviously, in the same division. I think it's going to be slow out of the gate. Like, I think the Denver Broncos start slower than expected. And then we don't even know if there's a suspension coming down for Jerry Jeudy, who was arrested recently and then released. And there are other concerns with this team, too, right? It's not, like, just that. But I really like their pass rush. Randy Gregory, Bradley Chubb. I think Draymond Jones, the defensive tackle for the Denver Broncos, is one of the more underrated interior pass rushers. I love their secondary. Sertan, Darby, you brought on Kwon Williams, Justin Simmons, Kareem Jackson. It's a really good team. And even if Jerry Jeudy is suspended, if Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick are healthy, it's still a good receiving core. I worry, though, it's just going to take some time. It's going to take some time for Russell Wilson and Nathaniel Hackett to work this stuff out, so much that it's going to be difficult to get ahead of the Chiefs, get ahead of the Los Angeles Chargers in the same division. And honestly, if I was going to bet one team that isn't the Raiders to finish last in this division, it would be Denver, right? It would be Denver. Now, that's because the Chargers and Chiefs, I think, have better quarterbacks and they have more consistency coming year over year. That is my biggest worry for Denver.
I do think there's reason to be a little bit concerned that the defense goes backwards.
Like, okay.
And
Vic Fangio leaving is big, too.
Exactly. They constructed this defense around, you know, a Vic Fangio scheme, which is the scheme that is kind of in vogue right now. But that's the guy, right? Vic Fangio, not creator of this scheme, but the sort of the leading NFL light running this type of defense right now. Brandon Staley from his coaching tree coming up behind him as well. This is a defense that was really good because of Vic Fangio and the players that they assemble for. Now you've got those players, most of them, he let a couple walk, but Vic Fangio isn't there anymore. So are they able to maintain that level of defense, or is that going to take a step back? And then you're in a situation where anything Russell Wilson does, first of all, has to offset the defense taking a step in the other direction, and then has to get better than everything the offense. I think you've put a nail on the head of... The Russell Wilson thing might not be the cure-all that everybody thinks it will be, right? Not because Russell Wilson isn't a really good quarterback, but one, like, think of how much projection needs to happen for everything in there, right? We're assuming that Cortland Sutton, Tim Patrick, and Jerry Jeudy have this, like, untapped potential that you're not going to realize with Drew Lock, which is a reasonable assumption, or Teddy Bridgewater. But that doesn't mean it's going to get you all the way to, like, elite just because we like those guys coming out or, you know, we liked what they've done in sort of limited flashes. They might just be limited receivers that don't have that incredible ceiling that can take you all the way to where they want to go. Russell Wilson, as you said, like, he's coming in, not just has to gel with Hankett, but they need to... Russell Wilson has a very specific style of play that might not be changeable, right? You might not be able to get the way Russell Wilson plays out of Russell Wilson, because I think a big reason he plays like that is because he's, you know, under 6 foot and can't see, right? He has to buy himself throwing lanes and windows and all those kinds of things. So that might not go away. The offensive line, it's done a perfect job of what we say and you know, creep back toward average, but it is still average.
Yeah.
Like, an average offensive line, as much as you're fine, that's good, you're good. Eventually, you're going to run up against a team with a really good defensive line, and average is going to be a problem. And that is the only flaw with the idea of creep back toward average. You definitely want to get there, but you it's still not great. So I think as much as a year ago, we were talking about this roster as being an Aaron Rodgers away from a Super Bowl. There are some areas where it might just be an okay roster, and all of a sudden that's not good enough in a year where everybody's going on this arms race, right? Kansas City, Buffalo, or not Kansas City so much, but Buffalo, the Chargers, like the whole AFC has just been loading up with elite playmakers, including Denver. But that means the whole conference got harder. So even if the roster had stayed as it was a year ago, it might not have been enough.
I definitely think that we are overestimating how quickly Russell Wilson's going to have a lot of, you know, success in Denver. And a lot of that is because, you know, I think a lot of the reason we have high expectations is Russell Wilson is in that elite tier of quarterbacks, or at least was.
But can be.
Can be, right? And I think even when you look at the back half of the last season, it's like the Let Russ Cook movement. Some people were blaming Pete Carroll. Some people were blaming all this stuff. It's like he also wasn't playing well. Like, he wasn't playing well towards the back half of last season. to expect him to come in and immediately be even a top two quarterback in his own division, top three quarterback in his own division. Derek Carr could outplay him from a PFF grading standpoint next year, I think. And I think that, to me, is enough to fade them a bit versus where the market is. And I'm lower on Denver than I think a lot of where the market is. I think the market has them around like 10-ish wins. I think I'm coming under that.
I love referring to it as a movement, the Let Russ Cuck movement.
Yeah, it's a cult following, really. Yeah.
Then people marching on Parliament in Seattle, wherever the state capital is in Washington. All right, let's move on. Kansas City. Kansas City, the one team that didn't really go on this arms race that the rest of the AFC undertook, and instead went the other direction, traded away Tyreek Hill for draft picks, had one of our favorite drafts. But what's their fatal flaw?
I went cornerbacks. I don't like them losing Tre'Davious Ward this offseason. And they have L'Jarius Sneed, who's been awesome for them. Rashad Fenton's still there. And then they brought in Trent McDuffie from Washington in the draft. I don't love that cornerback room, though. And I think it could be concerning with, you know, in that Spagnuolo defense, how multiple they want to play. They don't have a lot of talent in that room. I think McDuffie is a really good cornerback prospect, but it could take time, like it does with all rookie cornerbacks, right? And then even with Sneed and Fenton, they haven't been elite in any points of their career yet. Sneed maybe in a couple games, but I don't see long, you know, developmental, you know, pieces there at corner. I worry about L'Jarius Sneed. I worry about Rashad Fenton and McDuffie. I just don't think it's going to hit right away. They could be giving up a lot of yards, and I think part of me wanted to say the receiving core, but I don't I don't hate it. You know, Marcus Valdes-Scantling, Sky Moore, Juju Smith-Schuster is a complementary receiving core that I think Patrick Mahomes can work with. Andy Reid needs to adapt to what this offense offers now, because there is no Tyreek Hill, and he's not coming back. You need to adapt what this offense does with that trio of receivers, and obviously Travis Kelce's still there, and I think he's going to. And I think Mahomes is going to be able to adapt his, you know, his approach to the offense as well, where I don't think that any level of adaptation is going to help. It is that quarterback room.
So that, to me, is the biggest concern, is can they adapt? Because basically last season, This gets talked about all the time. Oh, the team has a blueprint to beat the other team, right? It's almost always never true, right? It's just that they actually have a certain group of players that they can play in a certain style, and that was a problem. Everybody else can't replicate it. The Chiefs, legitimately, there was a blueprint to stop the Chiefs last year. Everybody could do it. You just play too high, you show them those looks, take away the deep ball, and they're automatically worse, right? Before you do anything else, they're worse. Mm-hmm. And then if you take extra layers to it, like what the Giants did, where you start showing them too high looks and then double team Tyreek and Kelce, all of a sudden they're like paralyzed. They can't do anything. They don't know where to go with the ball. So Kansas City, I think, took a look at that and went in a weird direction, which is, let's trade away the guy that's creating the too high looks. We get rid of Tyreek Hill. He's coming up for a $30 million deal, a year deal anyway. Get rid of him. All of a sudden we're going to see less too high. Now we go back to one single high stuff, and that's where we cook.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, but like, if that's what's causing you problems, teams are still going to run it, even if Tyreek Hill isn't there.
No,
Tyreek Hill might have been the reason that teams were going to two high.
I think a lot of the reason was Mahomes, too, though.
Well, I think Tyreek Hill started off being a reason. Tyreek and Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Like, that threat, well, let's start going to two high because that's killing us. And then, oh, it seems you struggle with two high. Let's start running a lot of that. So that's, and then that became literally the MO to stop the Chiefs. If your solution to that is, well, let's trade away the devastating deep threat, we'll bring in, you know, Marquez Valdes-Scantling because he can run deep as well, but like, we've traded away the guy that scares people and then we'll figure it out. Teams are still going to show you that look until you show that you figured out how to be patient and not, you know, cause your own problems. And that was a big issue for Kansas City last year. So if they haven't figured that out, they'll still be good. They still have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, and there's still playmakers there, and Travis Kelce, and one of the best offensive lines in the NFL. But this is like fatal flaw. Can you win a Super Bowl?
Yeah.
If they haven't figured out how to play against two high shells and be patient and just not cause turnovers and mistakes yourself, they're not going to beat the best teams in the NFL. I know they can't, you know, they beat Buffalo by 13 seconds. But you're not going to do that if the blueprint is that simple.
The content surrounding the first 4 weeks of the Chiefs season is going to be incredible. Because if they're really good without Tyreek Hill, it's going to be they fleece Miami and Mahomes is the GOAT and it's all this stuff. But if they suck, they're going to be like, oh, Mahomes is trash. Or like, oh, Mahomes was never good. I mean, there's already
product of Tyreek Hill.
There are already quarterback lists from people who are on TV and working in sports media that don't have Mahomes as a top five quarterback. If this first 4 weeks goes a little bit south, like they lose two games or something and the offense doesn't look great, They're going to be like, oh my gosh, Mahomes is just a product of Tyreek Hill. He's never going to be good again. So I'm excited for that. I really do like
Tua in the Hall of Fame.
Yes. I think the content through the first 4 weeks of the NFL season is some of my favorite because it's some of the most polarizing.
Yeah. Well, it's because you've got you've such a small sample size. But it's all you can
But everyone needs the content right after week one. Oh, right. Whoever wins week one is going to the Super Bowl. Whoever loses, the whole season's
And it's almost all you can go on because you can't like dive back into last season or the season before everything was different. It would be hilarious, though, like if Mahomes had two rough games to start with and Tua looked like a superstar for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. That would create some hot takes.
Yeah,
like people would be out there.
I'm excited for that.
That would be a lot.
I need that.
I'm in. Las Vegas.
All right.
The Vegas Raiders.
All right. I feel really good about the Raiders next year. I like the addition of obviously Devontae Adams. They have Hunter Renfrow still there. Darren Waller. It's a good receiving corps. Like actually good. And I like that they moved on from Bryan Edwards because Bryan Edwards averaged like the lowest yards per route run outside receiver of any receiver the last 2 years.
Otto
what?
Overtime TO.
Oh, okay. That's who he is? Mm-hmm. I hate Bryan Edwards. I never thought he was good coming out of South Carolina. I think the fatal flaw is obvious, though. This offensive line. I mean, it is bad. Colton Miller's good. And I'm hand up wrong on Colton Miller when he was coming out of UCLA. I did not think he'd develop into at least a top 12 tackle in the NFL, maybe even top 10. But then after that, Denzel Good, Andre James, Alex Leatherwood, and Brandon Parker. Now, maybe one of those, maybe Good is subbed out for Dylan Parham, the interior offensive lineman they drafted out of Memphis, or Thayer Mumford makes a play. Who knows? But that, regardless, is a really, really bad offensive line.
Yeah. And it might be the worst in the NFL.
I don't know if their decision to bring in Mumford and Parham, specifically two interior offensive linemen, was predicated on this idea that Alex Leatherwood would kick out to tackle. Mm. And if that's the case, that concerns me even more.
I mean, yeah, like if you're putting Leatherwood back at right tackle, you need to have seen something pretty dramatic from him.
Or your evaluation, if you're Ziegler, right, the new GM at the Raiders, like it was like, oh no, I liked him at tackle and I'm going to move him there.
But like, but from what we saw last, like he was an absolute like cataclysm at right tackle, was slightly better at guard, but was still terrible. Like, if you're putting him right back at right tackle, and in your mind, nothing has changed. Mm-hmm. Like, we haven't seen anything different. We're just deciding that year two, he's going to get it. That's got the recipe for an absolute train wreck.
It's wild that such a talented team offensively, specifically quarterback in the skill positions, has two critical fatal flaws. The offensive line, Denzel Good, Andre James, Alex Leatherwood, Brandon Parker, whatever rotation goes in, it's not going to be great. And then the secondary. Losing Casey Hayward this offseason was huge.
Yeah.
And now they replace him with Rocky Sin. They have Nate Hobbs in the slot, who was a really good rookie coming out of Illinois last year. But then you still have a lot of youth there. Trayvon Mullen, who's been who's young and has been hurt a ton. Nate Hobbs, who's also hurt last year. Trayvon Merrick is coming into his second season. I worry a ton about this this secondary as well. I think the Raiders, man, they're going to need to surprise a lot of people with players that no one's expecting to be all that good next year.
Yeah, they're bad in two areas that individually can completely undermine.
Can be fatal
either area of the either side of the ball. That's risky. As much as you went all in for pass rush and wide receiver help, and that's great, you might be screwed with the offensive line in the secondary. Chargers were one of those teams that went in with the arms race, but what have they left over?
You don't have a fatal flaw for the Raids?
Oh, I was agreeing with your offensive line.
Chargers. I went with. No, sorry.
I believe the Raiders are flawless.
Yeah, let me see. I'm trying to find it in the alphabetical that I did. Now I can't. I said offensive line for the Chargers as well. The Chargers still have some concerns, in my opinion, at right tackle. I don't know if it's going to be Trey Pipkins or Storm Norton. That's
either way,
a concern.
It's bad.
And Zion Johnson, who everyone at the Senior Bowl is like, oh my gosh, he could start tomorrow in the NFL, still a rookie. And I always say this, I say this all the time, but like Tristan Wirfs is an outlier. Rashawn Slater is an outlier. Like these guys oftentimes do not come out of the gate really, really successful, specifically in pass protection. So I worry about Zion Johnson as a rookie. I think he's a phenomenal prospect, and they're right where they took him. But still, you have either Trey Pipkins or Storm Norton at right tackle, a rookie at right guard, and I still don't really love Matt Filer at left guard either. And that is concerning. They don't have depth along the offensive line either. And you talk to some people around the league, they say, you know, the reason we weren't able to, you know, have the big plays that we wanted to with Justin Herbert wasn't because we needed a deep threat beyond Jalen Guyton, is because the offensive line wasn't giving us enough time. I know they upgraded there. I just think it's going to be, they're a year away potentially from having like a solidified offensive line. I think that's going to be the concern.
Yeah, I think they're probably 4/5 of a solid offensive line, but that right tackle is a real concern. Mm-hmm. Like Trey Pipkins, Storm Norton, whoever that is, I mean, that's not ideal. That's like actually a problem area.
Yeah.
And we saw that all last season with Storm Norton. Like, he was bad enough that it was prohibitive. Like, he's bad enough that you can't – we talk all the time. If you got four-fifths of a good offensive line, you're in pretty good shape because you can kind of patch up the last one. You can, but it – like, you need to do – it takes a lot of work, right? Because you got to permanently dedicate essentially a tight end to that side, or a running back and constant chipping help, or the line has to slide that way the whole time. You can kind of hide a Storm Norton, but – it takes a lot of work to do that impacts other areas. Like, you can't just play the offense. You have to play the offense plus whatever you need to do to protect Storm Norton. So I would love for them to find a guy, like a right tackle on the street right now that's just, we'll just give you viable play. Like, doesn't have to be good.
Yeah.
Just anything. Like a Riley Reiff caliber type of player, where a guy can just come in and be vaguely average, and then you can forget about that side of the line.
I think they need that as well. Someone in the YouTube chat who's watching live said their fatal flaw is their fourth down coaching, and I just vehemently disagree. Like, there were a lot of people. I think Michael Lombardi said that Brandon Staley wouldn't have a job if he was the GM or something, which is insane to say out loud. But a lot of people hate how Staley approached fourth downs and like some of those critical decisions last year. I am all on board, as you know, working at PFF and the analytics movement, another movement. I agree with every fourth down decision that Brandon Staley made last
year.
And I think it's going to be the reason this year that they make a run, right? I think that he's going to stick to his guns, and a lot of people are going to be eating crow when Staley goes for it on fourth down in some of these big games he's going to have against the Chiefs, against the Broncos, and obviously hopefully deep in the postseason. That I think that's what's going to ultimately push them further.
Because the interesting thing about Staley is that he went for fourth downs where even like the analytics data would say, ooh, no, kick it. Like, he was going for ones where even the data says don't bother. Because, you know, like, the thing that happens is the dude in the booth is like, well, the numbers tells you to go for it every time.
Yes.
Like, the analytics says go for it whatever. Yeah. They never say kick. Analytics will tell you to kick when you should kick.
Yeah.
And there were a bunch of times where the analytics was saying kick, and Staley was still going for it. And it's incredibly – it's interesting because it's brave because of exactly that guy in the comments, right?
Yeah.
If it doesn't work out, if you don't have like an amazing record on those fourth downs, you're going to get everybody shouting, oh, this guy's an idiot, get rid of him, fourth down's going to kill you. He's still, like, being on that side of the error margin is better than being on the other side. But it is interesting that he went all the way that side.
I want more discourse around fourth down play calling.
Yes.
Fourth down decision making.
Yes.
There is zero discourse after every failed fourth down decision on the play call. At all. Like, no, like zero. That's where the Chargers, I thought, failed a lot last year. Is that a lot of their play calling was just ass, or even just execution, right?
There's two parts of the call, right? Simple yes or no, go, no go. If you're going for it, now what the hell is the play you're pulling out to get the 3 yards? Because if you're pulling out some ridiculous, like some of the stuff the Steelers ran on fourth down, like fourth and long, and you run like a dump off shallow pass to Najee Harris.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? That was never going to work.
Exactly.
Literally never. You could run that 100 times and not once is it going to pick up a first down. Like, that's not a problem with going for it. That's a problem with whoever made that play call.
In the big Chiefs game where they went for it like four or five times or whatever, and they got a lot of them down the stretch and whatever. But like, one of the fourth downs was when Donald Parham suffered that freak accident that I don't think we'll ever see in the NFL again, where he like fell down and got knocked out.
Well, they basically scored and he got KO'd in the end zone.
The other one was Dan Sorensen blanketed a receiver, which if you have a play in your book that involves that, or players on your team that can get blanketed by Dan Sorensen, that's the issue. And then Jared Cook on the other one, I have this tweet up, didn't create any separation against Nick Bolton. Like, those are the issues. The issues are not in the decision. The issues are in that you did not have plays that created wide open receivers or even close to give you opportunity.
Did you see, so now that I'm like a TikTok superstar.
Oh yeah.
I spend a lot of time on TikTok. There was the Saints have signed Sorensen as well, right? So now that Sorensen and Tyrann Mathieu have linked up together again, right?
Oh.
Somebody had created a TikTok of all these plays that are simply, they've zoomed in on Tyrann Mathieu as a big play goes over his head. And he's literally going, and like, then it zooms in on Sorensen being the guy getting toasted behind him.
That's incredible.
And like, to notice that, like, ever is pretty impressive. To then go and find them all, because there was like half a dozen.
You need
of these
to send
plays.
Me that TikTok.
I don't know where it is. I got to find it again. But like, there were half a dozen of these plays where Mathieu was just like, what? And like, 50 yards over his head, Daniel Sorensen is getting toasted by a wide receiver. But I just thought that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
All right, that's the whole division done.
Love to see it. We kind of went through quick.
Well, we got to. It's a two-hour show. We got 32 teams. There's not a lot of time to stop and smell the roses. AFC South, Houston Texans.
This one's tough. So I wanted to give a specific fatal flaw for the Texans. Because I could have easily said, like, their roster's bad. And, like, they're literally the team, from a betting market perspective, expected to win the fewest amount of games. Yeah, so their fatal flaw is existing. Yes. But, like, I like what they've done to add to the secondary. And I think it's going to take some time, though. Like, Derek Stingley Jr., rookie. Jalen Petrie, rookie. MJ Stewart's going to probably start for this team. Terrible. Steven Nelson is probably their best cornerback tomorrow. That's concerning. It's a combination of that and the pass rush, though. I think Ogbonnaya Okoronkwo getting away from Los Angeles, I think he's a breakout candidate. And I like Grenard as well, as another guy that won a high volume of his reps on limited snap counts. But the interior defensive line is horrendous. Roy Lopez, Malik Collins are not offering anything on the interior pass rush. I think Malik Collins over the last 2 years has the worst pass rush win rate of any defensive player. So the defense is bad. They're going to give up a lot of points. I think it's a toss-up between the secondary and the pass rush.
Yeah.
It's not Davis Mills.
I mean, he's not the biggest reason.
Yeah.
I'm not sure he's the reason they're going to win either. I think the Texans, they're ultimately, the fatal flaw is that they're not far along enough in the project, right? The project started when they got rid of Deshaun Watson. That's when they could actually start making moves that were constructive as opposed to just treading water.
And I like how they've approached the rebuild. I mean, they're going slow with it and keeping some locker room mainstays to maintain culture like Laremy Tunsil and Brandon Cooks. They are not, in my opinion, approaching this wrongly. Where you compare, we'll get to this team, but one of my favorite, we'll get to it. I'll save it. We'll tease.
No, I like the moves they've made. I just think you can't go from being like the worst roster in the NFL to being viable in a couple of months, particularly when most of the free agency had already happened, right?
Yeah.
By the time they got rid of Deshaun Watson, free agency was essentially over, and they couldn't go crazy with the big moves. They had to tinker around the edges. I love bringing in a guy like Jerry Hughes. Jerry Hughes is a guaranteed 50 pressures for you, even at this point in his career. So adding him to Okoronkwo and Jonathan Grenard, that pass rush might be fine.
Yeah.
But you're right. The secondary could be rough pretty early.
I'm calling out Okoronkwo as a guy that if he plays 600-plus, 700-plus snaps next year, I think he's going to impress a lot of people. I think he's a breakout candidate as a pass rusher.
Colts. Colts are up next.
Colts. What did I have for the Colts here? Let's see. Did I accidentally skip over the Colts?
Is it outdoors Matt Ryan?
It's not outdoors Matt Ryan. I think it's still, for me, the receiving core. I like Michael Pittman Jr. a lot. I've never liked Paris Campbell. And they have Alec Pierce, who's a rookie, but I think he's a limited route tree guy that wins on the vertical routes, kind of similar to what you asked DK Metcalf to do.
Which is at least a good compliment to what you have in Michael Pittman.
Yes.
They gel well as a duo.
The receiving core, I think, worries me a bit. And then defensively, it's still a pass rush that I think you need to see work. Kwity Paye has not hit yet as a pass rusher. And Unique Ngakoue, I think, was solid for the Raiders. But I don't think he's going to be a true number one pass rusher for them. And then on the interior defensive line, you have DeForest Buckner. But I worry about the pass rush. I worry about the receiving core. I think they're average at a lot of the high-value positions. I like adding Stephon Gilmore, but he's still getting older. Where they're really good is the low-value positions. Running back, interior offensive line, and linebacker. They have really outstanding players at all those spots. Obviously, Quentin Nelson, Jonathan Taylor is arguably the best running back in the NFL, and Darius Leonard, one of the top linebackers in the NFL. At the high-value positions, Kwity Paye, Unique Ngakoue. Receiver is Pittman, Pierce, and Campbell. And then at corner, it's Stephon Gilmore, Kenny Moore, and Isaiah Rogers. They're lack of premium talent. They have average to above average talent there, but their lack of premium talent at those high-end positions is super concerning. And that doesn't even bring up, obviously, the thing we're trying to avoid, quarterback. And I think Matt Ryan's an upgrade over Carson Wentz. I think a lot of people would say that.
Mm-hmm.
But still not in that elite tier at a premium position.
Did you see what Yannick Ngakoue's run defense grade was last year?
Probably ass.
28.
Yikes.
For a guy that is, at this point, people know he's bad against the run, so he's kind of schemed up as a designated pass rusher, and he still only manages a 28. Now, some of that is skewed by the fact that at this point in his career, he genuinely isn't even trying to play the run.
Yeah.
When you're a designated pass rusher, you're rushing the passer, so if a run comes in your gap, you've probably shot 8 yards upfield and left a giant hole.
It's a big reason why the Raiders and that new Patriots leadership came in and said, we're trading away Yannick Ngakoue and going and get Chandler Jones. And
on the other hand, like, you're facing easier runs that way as well. So to get a 28 is still pretty awful.
True.
I tend to agree with you. I think their secondary is a concern. They're one of those teams, though, that for a while have been able to overachieve relative to the talent level they've had in the secondary. Indianapolis has done this for a few years. Arizona has done it as well. Like last year, you look at their secondary on paper and you're like, wow, that team's going to get wrecked every week.
Yeah.
And they didn't. So I have reached this point where I'm kind of giving the Colts a little bit of a benefit of the doubt there that I wouldn't for other teams. But on paper, it definitely does look like the weakest area.
I think they could win this division. I honestly think that it's going to be between them and Tennessee to win it. And
I mean, when you look at what happened last year, like they were a Carson Wentz implosion away from being a playoff team. They had to lose to Jacksonville at the ass end of the season.
What doesn't get brought up enough in that Jaguars game is Carson Wentz had some of the best throws of the season in that game. Like he had that one to T.Y. Hilton, like over. He had some really impressive throws,
and then
he just like
never
completely
close.
Shit the bed at the end, where he was just throwing picks to people's chests.
Right, but also like the game, it wasn't close.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It wasn't like a nail biter that we finally like no, like they got like a halftime.
They were like 16-point favorites too. It was a disaster.
Like they are losing this game, and it's not even like they're going to need a miracle to get out of this. That was bad. So you have to think that Matt Ryan's probably not going to give you games like that.
No.
At least that's what they're hoping.
I'd love to see Pittman Jr., who I really liked coming out of USC. And I know I mentioned the receiving corps has some concerns, but if he takes like a real step forward and shows up as a number one receiver that's getting 8 to 12 targets a game and exceeds expectations, that would be a massive boom for the Colts because they need a true like elite player at one of these premium positions. They need one. Like Quiddy Pay needs to hit. Michael Pittman Jr. needs to hit. Obviously, they bring in Stephon Gilmore, who was elite at one time, but I don't think he's going to be that this year. They need an elite player at one of these premium positions to really take that step forward.
I also wonder if Matt Ryan is going to create some kind of pivot or focus on the tight end position more than wide receiver.
Ooh.
Because you got a guy like Mo Alie-Cox is a freakish athlete that seems to have been underused his entire career. They just draft Jelani Woods, who's literally a singular athlete. Like the tight end position has never seen a freak like that.
Yeah.
So you suddenly have those two guys on the roster, and you're a little bit lower than where you want to be at receiver, that kind of says, well, let's start feeding some targets this way.
Mo Alie.
And, he's just come from a team that's well used to splitting a tight end that wide and playing him as a wide receiver. So let's see what those two guys can do in space on an island against DBs that have no hope.
Mo Alie-Cox is the next Kyle Pitts. Is that what you're saying?
Let's
get that on our social graphic.
I was going to say, if you could put that one up, put it right out there on social media, put my name attached to it, link it to my Twitter so that they can come right
with a pic,
to me.
I think the image of Cox and Pitts together, and I think that would do really well. I think that's a minimum of 1,000 likes.
I think it would be as well. Jacksonville. The Jacksonville Jaguars.
I put here, and this, I remember I was hinting at a team that I hated their offseason. It's the Jags.
It's the Jags.
I hate what the Jags did this offseason. Hate what they did.
Hate it.
Their best move was getting rid of Urban Meyer, and they didn't even do that this offseason. They did that in the season last year.
True.
And a lot of the reason why I'm not a fan of it is I think they spent a lot of money and didn't get a lot better.
But so the counter to that is that they have to spend money because nobody wants to go to Jacksonville.
Okay.
So where do you stand on that? Like if they're like, these are the only players we can convince to come to Jacksonville. We have to pay them this amount of money to get them in the door. Like, what is the alternative? Just sit there and do nothing?
No, I just think you could have got players that were in similar tiers talent-wise for cheap.
But you probably have to add 20% of the cheap to get them to Jacksonville.
I think you're right, but I don't know. I think that too many bad football teams use that as an excuse to pay Christian Kirk $4 years, $72 million.
Right, but how many of them are Jacksonville?
A lot of them are Jacksonville. They bring in Kirk, Scherf, Oluokun, Darius Williams, Fatu Kasi, and Zay Jones, all on at least all 3-year, multi-year deals, all over $20 million across. Like, that is an insane amount of money to, I don't think, a lot of players that like objectively improve them. And they lose DJ Chark, they lose Miles Jack, they cut Miles Jack, and then they lose Andrew Norwell as well. I worry about how they've spent big on multi-year contracts on a team that's still trying to find itself. And I think this receiving core is their biggest flaw.
So I think, the thing that I don't like about what they did is, So they were the team that did the...
I also didn't like their draft. Like, Trayvon Walker, I would have picked a different player there. Yeah. I didn't like who they brought in the draft. I didn't like how much they spent and who they spent on in free agency. My favorite signing was probably Fatu Kasi.
Yeah.
Then you go and trade back up into the first round and grab Devin Lloyd after making Foye Oluokun one of the highest paid linebackers and cutting Miles Jack, and then you grab Chad Muma and in the third, like it just made no sense. It was very
all
inconsistent.
Those moves. Yeah, all of those moves are for a position that
there's
doesn't.
No cohesion. There's no cohesion in this roster building plan. Yeah. Like there's no, like with the Detroit Lions, there's like a thought process. You can see it, you can feel it, you can smell the vision. With the Jags, it's like they're just throwing shit at the wall and finding out all the shit is sticking and it's on the roster. And it's Kirk. It's bringing in Zay Jones with how much they paid Zay Jones. I just don't know. They're going to come out of this year still not winning a lot of football games, still not putting Trevor Lawrence in a really, really good position to succeed, and finding themselves probably having to cut some of these guys because they spent way too much money.
I like that because that's literally the argument I made, I think, coming out of the draft, was that the thing that I don't like is you can't discern a plan for what they're doing.
Yes.
Like if you can't see a strategy from the outside of a team's moves, it's probably not a good thing. There probably isn't a strategy. And if there isn't a strategy, you're not going to get better
because
you're just guessing. The thing that they did that it kind of highlights to me is, so they were the team that went and paid big money to Brandon Scherff, right? Mm-hmm. The classic top of the market free agency deal. Even just generally speaking, if the teams making the top of the market free agency deal are usually not the ones making good business. Like the second tier guys are the ones that get the value. And when you have an offensive line like Jacksonville's that needs help a lot of places, it's not getting fixed by throwing all of the money at Brandon Scherff. Whereas if you did what Cincinnati did and take that money and get three guys, you know, you're better.
Mm-hmm.
Like just get three mid-tier free agents or two or whatever. Like take that money and dedicate it to other places.
They are a team that should be chasing, like you said, mid-tier free agents. Like you don't – like even like – even this like second wave, right? Like, why not? Like, I'd rather have seen them sign like Julio Jones, like on short term deals because they don't know what's going to work. They're not in a position to start investing on multi year contracts because they don't know who's going to be a part of this team. I don't get it. I don't get it. I think you have to compare it to. I think so. You compare the Jaguars build to the Jets build, who are in a very similar spot. They drafted a really big, you know, high-end quarterback, or they hope is a high-end quarterback, and they had to pretty much rebuild their entire roster. The Jets have approached it so much better with the Corey Davis signing 2 years ago. I like the Elijah Moore draft pick. Then they draft Garrett Wilson. They bring in C.J. Uzomah on a mid-tier deal. They bring in Lincoln Tomlinson on a mid-tier deal. They draft Elijah Vera Tucker. They signed Carl Lawson, signed Sheldon Rankins the previous year. Like, they have done it right, in my opinion. The Jaguars, on the other hand, I think spent a lot of money on not a lot of talent.
To me, like, their fatal flaw is that I don't think they've done enough around Trevor Lawrence. Like, the
supporting
Jets,
cast is not good.
The Jets have at least approached this, like, the most important person attached to this franchise is the guy under center.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to do everything humanly possible to make sure that guy's life is good next year, which means new receivers, which means keep building the offensive line, make sure that thing is bulletproof, and continue on that track. The Jags didn't really. Like, they spent big on Brandon Scherff, but as we just said, that's one guy that's not fixing an offensive line that wasn't good overall. The wide receiver core, like, look at it. It's Zay Jones, Marvin Jones, Christian Kirk, Laquan Treadwell was, like, part of the receiving core last year. And
I'm scared.
Half decent
one. I'm scared.
This is not good. Laviska Shenault, who are you looking at from that group? And then the tight end room is, you know, Dan Arnold, Evan Ingram. Evan Ingram wasn't a bad, like, roll of the dice, but still.
No, that was one of my favorite signings, too, because they didn't spend a lot of money. And it's
right.
Like a one-year contract.
But now you're looking at this, and you're like, who of these guys are making Trevor Lawrence look good? And
Doug Peterson, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the only addition that they've made, in my opinion, this offseason that's objectively an upgrade and going to improve this team.
Right. And that's pretty scary. Tennessee.
Yeah. All right, what did I have for Tennessee here? I didn't mean to bag on – I don't know how much – Jaguars fans listen to your pod, but I did go in a
probably
little bit
less than before.
I think the biggest issue, and I think Vrabel was very much showed this on his sleeve, is replacing A.J. Brown. Replacing A.J. Brown is going to be very difficult.
21 days before they traded him, he said he will not be traded as long as I'm the head coach.
Yes. And then Paul Kukarski asked him in that post-draft press conference. Did you see this?
No.
He asked him, he said, hey, coach, You said
21 days
as long as I'm a head coach, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, hey, thanks for reading my words back to me. He was pissed. It was incredible. It was incredible. Vrabel, I love how much he's like an emotional dude.
Vrabel low-key hates the media.
Yes.
Not even low-key. The guy just hates the media. Like, yeah, that dude. So as much as, you know, when he's in a good mood, you'll see him wandering around like the Super Bowl or a combine or whatever, and he's nice and happy and chatting to people. But when he's not in the mood for it, that dude does not want to be wheeled out in front of a press corps, and he will let them know that he's in no mood to be doing this crap.
So I think replacing AJ Brown is going to be tough. I liked that they brought in Robert Woods, but Treylon Burks, who I was lower on than the consensus, but still, I still like him as a player. I liked him as the top 50 player in this class. I don't feel that it's going to be a one-for-one replacement. It's going to take time for him to replace that role in the offense. And then look at this offensive line, dude. Taylor Lewan at left tackle, which is great. Then you have Aaron Brewer, Ben Jones, Nate Davis, and Dylan Radins across that rest of the offensive line. That's a huge concern. They're going to be really, you know, I think they're going to focus a lot of the offense around Derrick Henry. They're not going to have the success as a passing attack that they had the previous year. I worry about this Titans team, and I like the Colts to win the division because of it. I like the Colts. I think they're favored right now at plus 110. I think the Titans are like plus 150. It's close. But I like the Colts to win this division. I think those are too big of fatal flaws, replacing A.J. Brown and this offensive line, to do it. Now, if all of the Titans offensive line listens to Taylor Lewan and pays PFF 50 grand apiece to get the grades up, maybe they'll be better, but who knows?
I love that that keeps coming up.
Yeah.
Because right? That, I think the first guy I ever heard.
Yeah, you've been here a long time. How long have you heard that?
It's a long time. Who was the first guy? It was some, God,
Derek Wolfe, right?
Yes, Derek Wolfe. Derek Wolfe was the first guy that brought it up, right? And it keeps coming back. And the funniest thing is, every time it comes back from a guy that you would bet money believes the earth is flat, or that like Bill Gates is trying to, you know, trying to control the, you know, all that kind of stuff. You'd bet like he subscribes to that kind of manifesto. So, yeah.
Taylor he doesn't Lewan, dispel it, at least.
Yeah. Taylor Lewan believes that believes that players can just pay 50 grand to PFF and have their grades like boosted through the moon.
So I have a take on it, actually.
Oh, and I give mine first?
Go ahead.
Because it's just on its face idiotic, right? Like, legitimately dumb. Like, we work with all 32 NFL teams who have a fairly adversarial relationship with their individual players from a contract point of view, right? They negotiate, both sides negotiate using PFF stuff, right? We also have how many college teams now? Like 110 or whatever?
I think it's like almost 120.
Right. The networks, like all these people paying us large sums of money. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many players would have to pay us 50 grand for us to be like boosting their grades random to the point where the entire system like makes no sense for it to offset the amount of money we're getting from those people, right? It's just, it's absurd. No. It's blatantly stupid.
I also would want to know which players have paid us, because I can't think of like, I can't think of a player that has like that came out of a season with a crazy grade and everyone's like, are you kidding me? There's no way. Like, I don't know. And are they bumping
it? To me,
is like, it 50 grand per like 5 points? Like, I want to know what the structure is too.
That's true. What does 50 grand get you?
Yeah,
how many grades boosted through the moon?
So this is what I think it is. I have a take, and I want to speak candidly on it. So we work with all 32 NFL teams. We work with almost 120 college football teams. But we also work with all the agents. And agents work with us to get packets of information on their players.
Yep.
Like, so like, I don't know which ones I could speak specifically to, but like there's there's a player that is going up for a contract negotiation. Like, he's going into free agency and his agent will reach out to PFF and leverage data and leverage a lot of our analysis and research to show that he, like, specifically for offensive linemen, because there isn't a lot of advanced data on offensive linemen. So we'll get a lot of offensive linemen. We'll get like cornerbacks oftentimes. And the agents will say, can you put together pretty much a presentation or a PDF of, you know, what he's good at and all this stuff, obviously making the player look positive, but not boosting the grades, essentially. You're not like, you're not going back and like, hey, I need a contract for, I'm trying to think of like a terrible player, like Storm Norton. Can you help me out? It's like, buddy, there's nothing here. We don't got anything for you. He's played a lot. Maybe that's what'll help you. But so I think that's what he's manipulating the truth of, though. Because I think it's not rooted in just complete garbage. I do think that,
I think it might be rooted in,
I think Lewan has heard, like, a player that he's a teammate of, right? An agent, he's like, yeah, my agent is paying PFF to help me get a new contract, which happens. That's true.
That, yeah.
And I think he reads that as like, oh, and then PFF just boosts your ass up, and then, and now you're getting all this dumb. And I think that's what
they
he's
reading.
They go
in, and they just put plus 20 to the grade.
Because I think it's happened too much. It's happened way too much to not be like somewhat misconstrued. It's got to be something along the lines,
but
right?
As I said, like maybe look who it's coming from.
I don't know. No, like, you're right. So you're right. Wait, don't you kind of see my logic there, though?
I do. No, I agree. That's an entirely plausible way of viewing it.
I think that's what it
and
is.
And if it had come from people that I didn't think subscribe to like pamphlets on on like stockpiling, you know, canned goods and stuff, then I might buy it. But remember, I've had this theory that like 25% of people will believe in literally anything. You know, 25% of people believe that aliens walk amongst us. 25% of people believe the Bill Gates stuff. 25% of people, I think, is just a number that no matter what the question is, 25, like that's your cutoff, they'll buy it, right? So all I'm saying is that everyone that said the PFF, you know, takes money to boost player grades thing, they all belong to that 25%, you know?
Fair. I think that's fair. All right.
Where were we?
We were on the Titans. That's okay. Where the Tara Luan thing came up. Yeah. But I said replacing A.J. Brown in the offensive line are probably their fatal flaws.
Don't you think that – so the Robert Woods thing is nice, but if Robert Woods cost you A.J. Brown, it's a bad move,
yeah,
right?
I don't think it cost them A.J. Brown, did they?
Didn't, I mean, Robert Woods is on like $16 million a year.
What cost them A.J. Brown – did you see the report that they were offering him a four-year $16 million – or $16 million per? Like, what cost you A.J. Brown was like, that's – stupid.
Right, but did you only do that because you got Robert Woods in? Suddenly,
maybe.
You got a $16 million.
I think it's devaluing the receiver position, though. I mean, like, just devaluing how good A.J. Brown was. Like, you don't, like, yeah, I get your cap constraint, but I also think you have enough logic to know that A.J. Brown wants a lot more than that and is going to get a lot more than that if you don't, you know, make a play.
Yeah, that seems like a weird move to me to bring in a guy for, like, serious money, not top of the market money. And then say bye-bye to an A.J. Brown because you don't have the $25 million a year that he's going to get for Philadelphia. Like the Chargers were able to keep two wide receivers for $20 million each. You know, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, those guys are both taking $20 million a year. You could have made it work potentially, but it's a strange move to make. I agree with you that I think that...
Someone said in the YouTube chat, I'm following along, Bobby Day, Colton Miller slid y'all a couple racks to boost his grade. if I wish that happened because I was so low on Colton Miller, I was pissed that he graded well.
I was like, you know, I saw the video and it just was funny, right?
Yeah.
But then I was like, that being said, if I found out that like Mike Renner had been doing that as a side hustle for like the last 5 years, yeah, like that was my opinion. Yeah. It's like, I don't think he is, but would I be completely shocked?
Because that's how it would have to happen.
Yes.
Because like,
somebody going rogue on the side, just like boosting the grades.
And you know who has most access to the grades? Steve P.
That's true.
Steve Palazzolo is probably, he's on PTO again, and he's like collecting a check.
I made that joke to Ben. He was like, no, I cut Renner off.
Oh, nice.
He's like, he can't, wanted to.
Why is Tom Brady graded so well over the last few years?
That's true.
And who has enough money to send $50,000 to Steve Palazzolo every year? That's the conspiracy I want to buy
into.
He's
been taking less. Why do you think he's been taking less? Because, you know.
Stevie.
All right.
PVP is just cutting.
Titans,
go ahead.
Don't love the receiving core. Don't love the offensive line. Honestly, quietly, though, I think that secondary, the cornerback spot. So they've invested a lot in it.
Yeah.
But they haven't panned out yet.
No.
Right? Christian Fulton, Caleb Farley, the first round pick. Yeah, I like Molden. But even Molden, like, you know, Roger McCreary this year, the longer the draft process went on, the more I kind of understood why he wasn't seen as high as some of these other corners, even though his grades have been good and he's been battle-tested was the term. Like, there's a reason the guy was battle-tested because he was not that hard to complete passes on.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, like, their safeties are great. Kevin Byard, Amani Hooker. But that's a group of corners that could get toasted pretty regularly.
Their quarterbacks weren't good last year.
Particularly, by the way, if they don't find pass rush. Mm-hmm. And they're not finding pass rush because they keep throwing money at not great pass rushers.
Jeffrey Simmons I like. DeNico Autry is one of the more underrated players in the NFL, former Raid. But Harold Landry, Bud Dupree, I am worried.
Yeah. Where do you stand on the nickname Bad Dupree?
Bad Dupree? I don't love it.
You don't love it?
Okay. I remember only because I remember when George Chihuri, who's an analyst here at PFF, I think he's also the GM of Consumer, he called out the Steelers for being the most overrated team when they were on that undefeated run, and then Bud Dupree like wanted to kill him or something. Oh. I kind of like to positively talk about Bud Dupree. Plus, he gives me $50,000 to boost his grade.
Of course, yeah. Dude, if Bud was giving you... Imagine how bad he would have to be to start with,
because
that's a rough place. All right, AFC East, Buffalo.
This one's tough, right? Because the Buffalo Bills are the favorite to win the Super Bowl in 2022.
Indeed.
So finding a fatal flaw for the Bills is easier said than done. I did say, though, their offensive line. So I worry a little bit about the Ryan Bates-Spencer Brown combo on the right side, and I worry about that. You know, they don't have John Feliciano, who was a depth piece for them last year. But Bodger was not good for them last year, and they still finished first in pass blocking grade in 2021. Yeah. So it's still a really good team. I just couldn't find another flaw. Spencer Brown isn't good. That's all I know. And right, maybe just specifically right tackle. Like right tackle, Spencer Brown needs to take a massive step forward if he's not going to be a liability last year. Because I think Bates and Brown are probably my biggest worries on this roster.
Yeah.
Outside of that, though, like I really they added Von Miller this offseason. Like it's a really I like the Kyrie Elam pick. They're the favorites to win the Super Bowl for a good reason. Yeah, right? If you're going to be real about this, it's like an injury to Josh Allen, but we're not going to say that.
Right. It is a really good roster. Like normally I would be like, hey, Kyrie Elam, a rookie corner starting day one. That's usually not a good recipe, but this is a defense that protects the secondary. Like there's a reason those guys all grade well every year, even though the talent level isn't necessarily amazing. Because they're protected. Like Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer always grade through the roof because they play in that scheme that, you know, even before when you go back when they were in Carolina and you had Kirk Coleman was grading really well because that safeties are protected in that scheme. Like it's a good defense for making sure nobody individually in the secondary gets wrecked. So for a guy like Kyrie Elam, it might be the best situation in the NFL to step into and be okay year one.
We're peeling back the curtain a little bit here, but Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer, I think, is a phenomenal safety tandem, one of the best safety tandems over the last 10 years. Jordan Poyer is a big anti-PFF guy.
Oh, yeah?
He sends DMs to the main account constantly asking for clarity on grades and all that stuff. And I've tried to get him in the office. I said, hey, have him email me, have him DM me or whatever, and like we'll try and book some flights and get him out to the office so he can see the grades. And he's just never got back to me. So he only kind of wants to chirp, but I'm not calling him out. But I'm saying I would love to get Jordan Poyer here and show him some stuff.
That's my favorite thing of no longer having to deal with the main PFF account is not having to get the DMs from players bitching about their grades all the time.
I started at PFF in customer service, and I think a high percentage of DMs were players' moms in college asking, or players' dads in college asking why their son sucked. Like some random defensive back for Colorado State's getting torched. And he's like, he did not play that poorly. What are you doing? It was a rough scene in customer service.
Yeah. Between that and the DMs of like, it's amazing. So people are like, oh, nobody cares about PFF. Like, dude, you should see the DMs.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Not just players and not just bad players, but like all pros. Like I would get a regular weekly DM from an all-pro cornerback complain, like just making sure that we had the tally for like pass breakups, right? It's like, no, I had two of those that day.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, but one of them is this thing that we put down as an HD. It's not a, like, it's the same play. You're getting the same grade
for it. I like that stuff, though.
It just doesn't go down in the PD column.
It maintains a lot of the integrity of the grades. I mean, I think it maintains it by like, you know, having that open line of communication.
I mean, I'm fine with it existing. I just don't want to be on the end of it.
No, that's fair.
Miami Dolphins.
So I only put...
This is one of your two quarterbacks.
Yeah. I've only put quarterback for two teams, and this one is one of them. Tua Tagovailoa. This team is good. I like Chase Edmonds. I like Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle. Like, this is a really, really talented football team. I think there's reason to think that newness at coach, bringing Mike McDaniel, could take some time, but man, he's got so many weapons. I think the offensive line has improved with Connor Williams and Tron Armstead coming in. This is a damn good football team. And Tua is in a prime position, not to win the division, I don't think, but to go to the postseason. Like, I think he can go to the playoffs with this team if he takes even 10%, 15% improvement. The biggest worry with Tua is not if he'll improve, it's just how much. And I think there's a good chance that he like is stagnant in how much he improves. But if he find a way here to take a small step forward, even just a small step, I think this Miami Dolphins team makes the postseason. I think he's the biggest flaw.
All right, I could see that. But we did say we were going to find a non-quarterback reason.
That's on me.
I think the offensive line is still a concern. They definitely moved in the right direction. Tron Armstead, Connor Williams, that should immediately make sure the left side is fine. The combination of center, right guard, Michael Dieter, Austin Jackson, I assume Robert Hunt is going back to right tackle, where I think he's better. So that would leave 3/5 of the offensive line in decent shape, but 2/5 are a problem. That could be an issue quite quickly. Though, by the way, I think the other thing, we shouldn't overlook the bump that this offensive line probably gets from this scheme coming in.
Yeah. Like,
this scheme is offensive line friendly as well as quarterback friendly and running back friendly and everything else. Like, the line immediately probably looks a lot better just by having that system in it. The other concern I have is, like, so we look at this and we're like, oh, Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. This offense has not been good at getting more than one playmaker to go off at the same time, right? For the 49ers, it was, first of all, it was George Kittle. And everyone was like, where's the number one wide receiver? It's like, well, it's George Kittle. Like, yeah. I don't have a wide receiver doing it. It's just George Kittle putting up stupid numbers. And then they got Debo Samuel, and Debo Samuel became that guy. And Kittle kind of faded off into the background. And then every time Debo was out of the lineup, Kittle would go off for like 200 yards in a game. They couldn't get them firing at the same time, right? It was all running through one guy. Can they do that now, or is this just going to be the Tyreek Hill show and Jalen Waddle gets kind of isolated and pushed to the side? Can they figure out a way of making both those guys go nuts at the same time? Because if they can, there's kind of a cap to how good that can be.
I think they can. I think they're going to, by just need, distribute the ball better than maybe, you know, San Francisco did with the same kind of offense, right? I think Mike McDaniel's going to come in, I think, spread the wealth to Edmonds, Hill, Waddle, Gesicki, and this offense, if Tua, again, takes a small step forward, I think it'd be really good. Even with the concerns along the offensive line, like Dieter, Hunt, Eichenberg, those three could easily be below average starters for them next year, which is a death blow, but they're going to get the ball out fast. They're not going to, you know, I think, like you said, this offense is good for offensive lines that maybe are lacking. It's all about distributing the ball and Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle staying healthy and being one of the most dangerous threats. I mean, that's a dangerous, dangerous tandem to stop in the NFL. New England Patriots. I went receiving corps.
Really?
I like Jacoby Myers a lot. I don't think he's a one. I don't like Devontae Parker. I've never had. And I don't think he's a one.
Wow.
Kendrick Bourne, also not a one. Like, they have a bunch of number two-ish receivers. And they drastically misused their tight ends last year. Like, I was so confused by how much they invested in Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith for them never really see the field at the same time.
Right.
I think Jonnu Smith played like fewer than 400 snaps or something. Like, it was weird what they did with their skill players. And I don't think it's enough, right? And Mac Jones, like, some people have this conversation around him being capped and how much more is he going to improve. We know what he is and all that stuff. I don't worry about that as much as I do. It's like he just doesn't have elite weapons, like, anywhere. And then the offensive line, you're starting Cole Strange, who, coming in from Chattanooga, I think could take some time, even though he could be, you know, an all-pro, who knows. But, like, it's going to take some time for the offensive line. This offense and the supporting cast around Mac Jones, specifically the receiving core, I just don't think is good enough to vault a Mac Jones-led offense into the elite tier.
I'm not sure that's a fatal flaw as much as just that offense isn't elite.
Mm-hmm.
I think the wide receiver core is fine. Like, you're right, they don't have a number one. But I think they've gotten good enough across the board that they've kind of offset that. They're taking the approach of, let's just get a bunch of guys that can win rather than one guy that can win everywhere. And I don't hate that as a strategy, particularly when you have invested in the tight ends already. In theory, there's a receiving core there that's perfectly functional, I think. And with a good offensive line, I think the offense should be fine. My concern is cornerback. Like, you traded away Stephon Gilmore, you let J.C. Jackson walk out the door. Now look at your corners. Like, it's Terrence Mitchell and Jalen Mills and Jonathan Jones and Malcolm Butler back for a second go-around. Marcus Jones, you just drafted like that. That's a group that should be getting torched every week.
Yeah.
It really is.
I worry about the cornerback room, too. That's a good call out. I don't know. It's hard to ever look at. I mean, when's the last time a Bill Belichick defense was getting torched on the back end, though?
Right.
It's been a long time. And this is the group to do it. I just still have faith in Belichick, like, finding a way on defense.
And also, by the way, who's, like, calling the offense? Like, they don't have an offense coordinator.
Bill. It's Bill. It's all Bill.
Right. So if Bill's now coaching the offense, does he have time to make
Bill
sure
Bill Belichick is the fatal flaw, quote graphic, Sam Monson.
Does Bill now have time to make sure that Jalen Mills isn't getting wrecked on the back end because he's got to deal with the offense?
He didn't have time to scout, obviously. No, I'm just kidding. I don't want to bag on the Patriots draft. I think the reason everyone doesn't like the Patriots draft is because they drafted players that were lower on the consensus board.
Yeah.
I think that's bad process, but still, Cole Strange, Tyquan Thornton could be developed into
And there is players. Evidence to say that is bad process, like, mm-hmm. overall.
Yes.
Whereas, interesting, so we had Eric Eager on last week, and he was saying that there isn't a ton of evidence to say that, like, value, like bargains, guys that slide mm-hmm. and then get drafted, there's not a lot of evidence to say that those guys actually turn out better than players just picked at that position.
And that's because, to butt in there, that's because so many teams have passed them on already
yeah.
that there's a reason that's drawing that, right? And it's injuries
right.
or it's whatever.
So, like, generally speaking, everyone feels great about those drafts because mm-hmm. they all had them higher in their yeah. boards, but there's a reason those guys are sliding.
Exactly.
So there isn't actually evidence to say that's a good draft.
It's a larger sample size of decisions.
Right. But the flip side, if you're consistently reaching mm-hmm. for players that everybody else thinks are worse, there is evidence to say that those don't work.
Because that's one decision, right? It's one decision to make a player reach.
See Mayock Michael.
Exactly.
For, you know.
And the evidence I like, even in addition to that, is 87% of the players in the first 32 on the Athletic Media Consensus Board win in the first round. Like, why are – and then if you go through the first three rounds, which is 105 picks, 82% of the first 105 players on the Media Consensus Board win in the first three rounds. Like, why are you playing a different game than everyone else? Like, you've been given the rules to a board game. That's what the draft is. The draft is just a game. And you've been given the rules. You've been given all this data, and you're still making decisions that are just – it's like hitting on an 18 if you get a 3 in blackjack is good result, not good process. Drafting a player that's in, like, the 200s on the consensus board in the first round – could be a good result if Cole Strange is an all-pro, but it's not good process because it just doesn't make any
sense. It's bad even if you hit because you could have gotten him lower down.
Exactly. Like,
that's the whole point in all this.
All right, sorry.
New York Jets.
The New York football Jets. No one says that. I put pass rush for the Jets.
Really?
And Carl Lawson needs to stay healthy.
Yeah.
And John Franklin Myers I don't see as even a top 15 pass rusher. He's great against the run, but he's not a good pass rusher. Sheldon Rankins needs to stay healthy, and Quinnen Williams has never hit. Like, this defensive line is a lot of... oh, I think they could be good, or I hope they're good. I don't think they're going to rush the passer well unless Carl Lawson plays a full 17-game season and Franklin Myers finds something in him. Rankins is also healthy.
Jermaine Johnson coming in?
Jermaine Johnson, I think, I don't think starts over Myers, though. They really like Franklin Myers.
I mean, there's going to be a rotation.
Like, a rotation. Maybe Jermaine Johnson helps. I still worry about the pass rush. I think it's a lot of hope. It's a lot of, you know, optimism that these guys will hit and these guys will stay healthy. I think... that's too much, in my opinion. And when you factor in the secondary, too, Sauce Gardner is a big win. T.J. Reed, I think, is an average to above-average starter. But after that, there's some worries.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's still some issues in the secondary. I think the front four will be okay.
Okay.
My issue is the second level. When you think about what this defense looked like with the 49ers, like, it went to a different level when Fred Warner showed up. Mm-hmm. And Fred Warner is one of those few linebackers in the NFL that can actually make a difference in coverage, right? His range and his ability to get in throwing lanes, it reduces the windows the quarterbacks have to work with. And Fred Warner can do this. Darius Leonard can do this. Eric Kendricks can do this. There's a few guys that can still get this done, and most other guys just can't. They're just trying to occupy space and hopefully occupy the right space and just cause problems. Then you have bad linebackers that can't even occupy the space, and you're just like, this is just an open target in the second level. When you look at this group, that's what this is.
Like, yeah.
This is just open season at the second level and against the Jets secondary. And if they were playing, you know, cover three, backing off, giving space, those linebackers are just going to get wrecked in coverage.
I know we're not talking quarterbacks, but I'm not on your podcast often. I don't know your official take. What do you think Zach Wilson is in 2022?
I don't know. I mean, I think he was bad year one. And, like, a lot
he was
of those
bad
guys,
in a way too that we just didn't see at BYU.
And it wasn't just him. There was a lot of concerns from the guys last year that, like, they weren't just bad, but they didn't really show the things that we were expecting. Like, it wasn't volatile; it was just bad. You know, that was really worrying for Wilson. So they did a great job of helping him out, and you know, the optimistic side of it says, well, this is what Josh Allen did, right? He was bad year one. It was kind of bad year two, but there was signs. There were green shoots. There were things you could hang your hat on and say, yeah, it's moving in the right direction. The team's getting better around him. And then they added Stephon Diggs, and the whole thing went to the moon.
The least accurate quarterback in 2021 was Zach Wilson. That's the concern.
With, like, a low average depth of target as well. Like, just
and, like, at BYU, he was the most accurate quarterback in the country, according to PFF's chart.
Yeah.
And so, there's not a lot of volatility in that when you, you know, control for clean pocket or control for depth. And he was low and high in college and low in the NFL. That I bank on getting closer to average next year. I don't think – if he's, again, one of the lowest, you know, least accurate quarterbacks in the NFL, that would be stunning. Like, the guy's got the yips or something.
Yeah, like, his sort of data profile from last year was concerning. Like, not just, oh, this isn't great, he hasn't looked great year one. A lot of guys don't, but that was actually worrisome. So they've done a great job of building around him, but he needs to show something this year.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's that division done, which means it's time for an ad read. This one apparently is the...
Get Sunday?
The lead presenting sponsor of the podcast.
Let's go.
Get Sunday. I was doing this yesterday. I was out there on the lawn with the Get Sunday pouch spraying it. Does your lawn have weeds, bare patches, or pet spots? Does it, Austin?
I don't have a lawn. I've never had a lawn.
Wow.
Never had a lawn.
I've never had a lawn.
Sunday can help you solve all these problems and more the easy way. They've got everything you need, from fertilizer to seeds to weed control, and it's all delivered right to your door. It really is, right? So this box shows up.
Yeah, walk me through it, because I have no idea.
So you go on the website, you type in your address, they have like a satellite picture of your house, which automatically calculates like the size of your lawn, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, you have an X whatever square footage lawn. We got you, right? And then everything you need is going to show up. So this box arrives in the door with the attachment for the garden hose and then this pouch.
Mm-hmm.
And you just hook it up, connect the two. There you go, in those pictures. Connect the two, turn it on, boom, hose on. And you just spray the lawn with this stuff, which has like fertilizer, all the stuff in there to kill weeds and do everything you need. Pet, family safe, all this kind of stuff.
Oh, so it's not a lawn mower thing.
No. Look, it's like an attachment to the spray, the hose.
Dude, look at that guy having a fucking blast.
I'm telling you. And then it also comes with this like soil sampling kit. So you like dig a little bit of your lawn, send it off to them. And they're like, oh, now we're into like, this is 2.0. Now we can tell you exactly what needs to go on this thing and nail it. And here's the thing. I got a theory. There are two different types of people in this world, right? There's the type of gardening green thumb person that like loves this stuff, right? Will spend Sunday out in their garden just doing stuff. Loving it. They will like this because it will make their lawn look amazing. And then you got the people like me who hate this kind of stuff, but will like this because you just have to spend 20 minutes with this thing attached to the hose and spray your lawn. I like that. Like, if all I got to do to fix the lawn is spray it down with this stuff, I'm in.
Lusher, greener, self-sustaining lawns. Better ingredients for people, pets, and the planet.
That's what we're saying.
Everything you need delivered to your door. Wow.
Sunday is offering our listeners 20% off. Full season plants start at just $129, and you get 20% off at checkout when you visit getsunday.com/NFL. Oop, I'm on the wrong thing again.
You suck?
No, I'm not. Can we get like these ad reads sorted out? This is the wrong podcast is put in here. I assume it's /NFL pod, but it could be /PFF.
/tailgate.
Can't quite tell. Yeah, or /tailgate. Get them the credit. That's 20% off your custom plan at getsunday.com/some random. No, yours is also /forecast.
Let's go. That was an incredible read. If I ever get a lawn, I'm getting Sunday.
I'm being undone by the ad read document.
Just on the pictures alone on the website, it just looked like every family with those lawns had such a phenomenal time.
They were enjoying themselves,
right? They looked really stoked.
I mean, look, the box arrives at your house, you're going to be happy. That's all I'm saying.
Can't wait.
All right, Baltimore, AFC North.
The Ravens. I am worried. I'm worried about the Ravens.
Really?
I want to support the Ravens.
Okay.
But their receiving core is scary. I don't like the depth after Rashad Bateman. And Rashad Bateman, who I loved coming out of Minnesota, still needs to take a step forward.
Sure.
But after Bateman, like, there's not a lot of talent in the receiving core. Now, I know they have Mark Andrews, and I know they like to run a fullback with Patrick Ricard. Like, they're not going to run a lot of three wide receiver sets. It's a big reason why Marquise Brown is leaving and wanted to leave even after his second season in Baltimore. I just think that if they get into situations where they need to stretch it out and throw the football, run more three wide receiver sets, like the Devin Duvernay after depth, I mean, it's just not going to be good enough. I just don't think this receiving core is good enough if they need to get into obvious passing situations. Now, their whole offense is predicated on not, right? Their whole offense is you're hoping that a heavy load of running the ball with Lamar Jackson and company and J.K. Dobbins coming back is going to be enough to not force yourself into passing attacks. But I think that the receiving core is bad enough to where I think it could be a fatal flaw.
They feel like a classic example of a team that could pick up a veteran before the start of the season.
They should.
Like
Julio.
Yeah. Somebody like that that's available and can just come in and not be Devin Duvernay, you know?
I like that.
That's all I'm asking for. I kind of think the pass rush could be a problem.
Like, okay.
Adafi Owe was pretty good year one, but would need to take a pretty sizable step forward to be like the guy that you're leaning on. Baltimore's very good at scheming pressure, so it's a smaller problem than other teams that would have this. But Calais Campbell has got to be reaching the end at some point, right? Like, he can't go on forever. When you look at their true edge rushers, Tyus Bowser, Jalen Ferguson, David Ojabo, obviously he's going to probably have the red shirt type year one. There's not a ton of guys where you're looking at and saying, that guy's bringing consistent pressure week after week after week. That's going to make a difference for this team.
Adafi Owe has to take a step. Has to take a step if it's going to work out.
Cincinnati, hometown Bengals.
Oh, man. This one was – I had a really hard time identifying – what their fatal flaw was.
Haven't they done an absurdly good job of going from like a flawed team to a pretty good one?
Yes. And,
like, very quickly?
I like their receiving core. I like their pass rush better than I thought I would with Trey Hendrickson, Sam Hubbard, Reeder, and B.J. Hill along the defensive line. Their secondary is hot. Chidobe Awuzie, Mike Hilton. Now, the cornerback opposite of Awuzie is going to be tough. Could be Cam Taylor-Britt, the Nebraska corner that they drafted. But the safety tandem and Bates and Bell is great. The fatal flaw I put down, and honestly, I don't know, we'll see, is the newness of the offensive line. Like, we've seen before that having so many new starters can lead to slow out of the gate, right? We even saw that with Kansas City last year, who like completely remade their offensive line and it took some time. Having Ted Karras, Alex Kappa, and Lael Collins all come over and all be new starters, I think could take some time to develop. But either way, it's going to be better than what it was last year.
Yeah.
We'll see if it is a fatal flaw. But like, it's again one of those teams where we're not doing it, but it's Joe Burrow getting hurt, right? If Joe Burrow gets hurt, it's over. But like, I think the offensive line is maybe where I'd put it because I like the secondary. I like the pass rush. I just think new players along the offensive line could lead to a slow start, but ultimately is a dramatic upgrade on what they had last year.
Yeah, I mean, really, I think their fatal flaw could just be catching the reverse end of variance that they had last year. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of things broke in their favor last year, or were sort of, they skewed on the high end of things that aren't supposed to continue to happen all the time. I think they did a really good job buffering against that with the offensive line moves and with everything they've done. But, you know, if Burrow isn't able to play out of his mind under pressure the whole time, that could be a problem. I think generally the offense should be good. The defense I have a little bit more concern about, but the Bengals have made themselves a good team very quickly. Cleveland
Browns. I put the Watson suspension. I mean, maybe, right? Like, that could, if the Watson suspension gets handed down.
It sounds like it won't be, right?
I don't know.
The last thing I read about this was that they're basically going to stall the cases until next offseason.
Really?
Legally, right? I don't really see the NFL putting a suspension out there before that's been resolved, just because they haven't so far.
Interesting. And then I think it's not the Watson suspension, it's the receiving core. And I like the addition of Amari Cooper for a fifth, but after that, it's Donovan Peoples-Jones, David Bell. Like, I don't know. I don't think it's a great receiving core. I think a lot of people are like, oh man, they added Amari Cooper. Donovan Peoples-Jones is going to take a step. And David Bell is one of my favorite sleepers. It's like, no. Okay, I think Peoples-Jones is not even a number two, in my opinion. And David Bell is a ways away from being like a legit even wide receiver too. I think he fills the Jarvis Landry role well as a rookie, but I think the receiving core would be this other fatal flaw, because I just don't think they have a lot of eliteness there, and I'm the biggest Amari Cooper fan in the building.
It's the, to me, it's the non-Myles Garrett front four. Like, people outside of Myles Garrett, like, they just have not, they haven't found those guys. Like, Jadeveon Clowney was a decent compliment for a while and then went quiet and couldn't be that guy. Jordan Elliott, we loved coming out, hasn't been an impact playmaker. Taven Bryan is a reclamation project. Steven Weatherly, like Alex Wright, I like this year as a mid-round guy they've drafted. But really, this is Myles Garrett and nobody else up front. That's a problem.
Who's next?
Pittsburgh.
All right. Pittsburgh, I went offensive line. I think that this is still a problem, right? Dan Moore Jr., Kevin Dotson, Mason Cole, James Daniel, and Chukwuma Okorafor. I think there could be some massive concerns there, especially if they're not getting the ball out as fast as they were with Big Ben. And I think the offense is not going to change drastically, but Pickett processing that quickly and moving that quickly, I think, could be difficult.
Yeah.
This offensive line, I think, is going to cost them big time. I love their receiving core, though. I think they have a good defense. This is a talented football team that I am higher on the Steelers than I think the market is. Like, I think they'll win more games than people are expecting with a rookie quarterback. But if they don't clear, I think their total is set at 8.5. If they don't win 9-10 games, it's because of this offensive line.
Do you think Pickett's starting day one?
No, I don't think Pickett's starting day one. I think it's Trubisky.
Yeah.
I think Trubisky wins the job outright.
How long do you think he gets?
And I think he gets 9 wins.
You think Trubisky's starting all
of it? I don't know if he starts all of it, but if he plays well, and I think he's going to play better than Pickett year one. Like, I do.
Yeah.
Like, I really do. And I think they could win 9 games.
But I also think he's not going to play better than Trubisky year one, like, which means that he's, you know, there's only a finite amount of time you're going to give Trubisky before you throw in the
I need the Bisque for a full 17-game season.
I don't think you're getting there. I think you're getting 4 or 5 games of the Bisque, and then Pickett's thrown to the Wolves. And
fair
the
enough.
Wolves are there. Like that.
Who's a better prospect coming out? The Bisque.
Yeah. I agree. I think that dynamic. So,
how many people outside of PFF call him the Bisque?
No, not
I don't think any.
If in fact any. I think that dynamic of quarterback holding onto the ball a long time, regardless of which guy it is. I think if it's Pickett, that guy might be holding onto the ball a record-setting amount of time, like 3.5 seconds of play, and it's a disaster. If it's Trubisky, you're still talking about one of the longest average time throws in the NFL. That being paired up with an offensive line that was kind of okay when Roethlisberger had the fastest average time to throw in the NFL. Yeah. Okay, they've added some players. Mason Cole, James Daniels, those are, I think, important additions, but they're not transformative, particularly when you've got still like Dan Moore starting at left tackle. That collection, like that combination, just has the capacity to go bad in a big way.
That said, I am higher on the Steelers on the market, and I would bet them over 8 wins.
Okay, perfect. What was your record last year?
Bad. Otherwise? Terrible. Yeah.
Excellent. We just want to set the market.
Yeah. You know, I would do this, and I'm dumb.
And I stand. All right, NFC West, Arizona.
People are going to hate me for this one, too. I put Cliff Kingsbury.
Wow.
Cliff Kingsbury.
I mean, you're right.
Needs more flack, man. Needs more flack. DeAndre Hopkins, I was doing this prep for the Mina Kimes podcast, and DeAndre Hopkins, over the last 2 years, has played 92% of his routes at left outside receiver.
Yeah.
The next closest receiver in percentage of routes is at 61. The highest percentage of right wide receiver of the last 2 years was Christian Kirk. At 81% or something. And the next closest receiver is like in the 50s. He is, in my opinion, too predictable with how he leverages his skill players to like have a sustainable offense through 17 games. We've seen them fall off every time. And I think it's because people catch on to what they're doing because they're not doing anything remotely as complex in terms of moving their talent around as other offenses. That, I think, is a huge concern. It's a massive concern. And then you factor in DeAndre Hopkins isn't even going to be here for the first 6 games.
Yeah.
They're out DeAndre Hopkins. I think Marquise Brown is going to have a better season in Arizona than he had in any year in Baltimore because it's a better situation for him and you have this connection with Kyler Murray, but I don't think it's immediately going to help them with DeAndre Hopkins out. Like, I don't think he's a true number one. This is what they've done from a roster building standpoint too, with they re-signed Zach Ertz and re-signed Max Williams and then drafted Trey McBride. Like, I don't understand those decisions. That defensive line is scary. Outside of J.J. Watt, it's Rashard Lawrence, Marcus Golden, and Cameron Thomas. I don't like the loss of Chandler Jones, and I don't think any of those players are filling that in. This is a flawed team across the board, and I think it's Cliff, ultimately, who's pulling the triggers with Steve Keim that it's going to cost him.
Yeah, their defense last year looked really rough on paper and somehow wasn't over the course of the season. If that goes away, like if they whatever lightning they caught in a bottle last year disappears and they're just a bad defense again, that's a problem. Like, a fatal one, in fact. But I agree, like, they're... It's not even so much Cliff. It's just they need to figure out why they keep collapsing in the second half of the season. Like, if you looked at just their record year to year, you'd be like, the Cardinals are doing great. Like, they've gone from a terrible team to an average team to a good team. They're moving in the right direction steadily every year. But every year it ends in this, like, disastrous fashion.
Yeah.
It feels so much worse. And I think that is connected with what you're talking about, that they haven't done a good job, or Cliff hasn't done a great job of adapting that offense. There's a reason everybody moves receivers around now, right? And I understand there's a reason why you're not. The idea being that you don't need to, you know, everyone doesn't need to learn all these complex things. They know they're playing one position, they're quicker, they can react faster, but it's not worth the trade-off that it is in college.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the advantage for an offense that is definitely worth doing at the college level, where a lot of the times you can win simply by executing faster and better than the defense. The NFL is better than that. They understand, they can execute. They're not like rushed off their feet by you being able to run a little bit of tempo.
Yeah.
So you need to move guys around and favorable matchups.
You have to be more multiple with what you're doing there. And I think it's tough because the market, I think, has rightfully faded the Cardinals. They're +125 to make the playoffs. They're under 8.5 wins is juiced to -120, and they're +400 to win their own division. Like, the market is low on Arizona, so I'm not sure if I'm betting that stuff just because it might have overcorrected itself, but I am similarly low as the market is on the Cardinals next year.
Yeah, I mean, they need to figure that out. Otherwise, they are going to be trapped in this world of, like, not elite.
Which easily, because they have a really good quarterback, right? Like, they still have Kyler Murray.
Right.
And you could see a lot of these on Old Takes exposed next year because Kyler Murray is really damn good.
But the problem is, like, if you continue to end the season the way they have since Cliff's been there, it's the same story, right? Because ultimately, like, if you're not playing well at the end of the season now, if you expect to be in the postseason every time, it means you're going to go one and done every year. because you're not playing well at the point where the games you don't have a game to lose anymore.
Exactly.
You lose, you go home. Los Angeles Rams, Super Bowl champion.
Rams, I put pass rushers edge specifically. Losing Von Miller, I think, is going to be tough. They have Leonard Floyd and Justin Hollins there expected to start, but there could be others. It's hard to say pass rush when you have Aaron Donald, though, because
right.
Aaron Donald is a monster. And even Greg Gaines gave them good pass rushing productivity last year. I think losing Von Miller, though, is going to be a big factor.
They're so much better when they have the foiled Aaron Donald. Mm-hmm. When they just got somebody on the edge that can even just clean up the Aaron Donald pressures is a ton. Like, and Leonard Floyd hasn't really been that guy as much.
Yeah.
Von Miller was so much better at it. I agree that's a potential issue for them. I also think there's a world with this offensive line that they've kind of cobbled together for a while through lower draft picks and those kinds of things falls apart. Like Whitworth was huge for them, and they invested a lot of money in Joseph Noteboom off a sample size of like 200 snaps. And they were
good. Yeah.
They were good 200 snaps. He looked, particularly at left tackle, right? They moved him around. Left tackle is his position, and he looked at left tackle like he could step in and replace Whitworth. But people can look like a lot of things off like two games, mm-hmm. right? What happens when you have to play 17 games? Does it look the same?
You also still have guys that have not been elite pass protectors, right? David Edwards, Brian Allen, Logan Bross is a rookie coming in. That is, I agree. The offensive line, I think the fatal flaw could be losing the two veterans that they did, Von Miller and Andrew Whitworth. Like, I think those two positions will lead to some step back there.
I also think there's a potential fatal flaw where you don't get playoff Matthew Stafford this year. Like, what if you just get regular Matthew Stafford again? Like, Matthew Stafford was like, what, the 12th, 14th
grade?
Don't
fade Matthew Stafford. We can't do it.
He was like 12 to 14 or something in the PFF grades in the regular season. And then the playoffs, we got a different guy. What if they make the playoffs this year and you still just get the 12th to 14th best quarterback in the NFL again?
Fair.
Is that good enough?
It's not.
No, it's not. San Francisco.
Indecision at quarterback, which is, I think, a way around this. No, you can't say the quarterback.
Huh.
But I think they would have been fine if they just made a call. Now I think that I worry that, because you talked to Chris, I was on the Chris Collins pod, and he's like, everyone in the locker room loves Jimmy Garoppolo. He's like they gravitate toward him. It's like, that if that's true, and I'm not saying Chris is wrong, but I'm saying if that's true, how hard is it going to be to start Trey Lance with Jimmy Garoppolo on the same team? Because he also said, I think Chris has inside information all over San Francisco, but he also said that the front office of San Francisco vehemently does not want to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo unless they're getting a lot back in return. And like, which is tough, right?
Why did you trade three?
I get it. I was like, I thought they were gonna cut him. He's like, there's no way they cut him. Because they think that they should get a lot back. He went to an NFC Championship game last year. He's been to a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
That's how they feel about him. So I just think there could be some real shitty...
Yeah.
I think if Jimmy Garoppolo is a backup behind Trey Lance, and even if Trey Lance plays like okay, there's going to be concern and
clash. This is like the Cleveland thing, right? Like you can't possibly expect there to be any value in Baker Mayfield when you...
But that's different. I think everyone in the locker room hates Baker Mayfield.
No, but the point being, you completely removed your own leverage, right?
Yeah.
You have zero leverage anymore because you've already traded for his replacement.
Yeah.
With Trey Lance, you already traded three first-round picks to go and get the guy because he's an injury disaster. Like, you, even if you think that Jimmy Garoppolo is great... You determined that he was a big enough injury risk that you were willing to trade three first-round picks to jump to three to get Trey Lance as replacement. So there's no leverage. Like, there's like one, maybe two starting spots left open in the NFL, and those guys are not interested in trading you the farm for the guy that you should either get rid of.
No, I don't think they're looking for the farm necessarily. Like, but they want picks.
But they don't want to trade you anything.
Yeah.
Why would they?
No, you're right.
It makes no sense. So, I mean, I agree with you. I think that's a problem. Like, the fact that they... Even independent of the Jimmy Garoppolo stuff, right? The fact that they haven't endorsed Trey Lance at this point and we're still wavering. Yeah. Regardless of what we saw from him last year, simply not, being all in and being like, oh, we're excited. Like, even the Bears are making those noises about Justin Fields, right?
Mm-hmm.
To the point where, like, every Bears fan in my mentions, like, you see, Ryan Poles thinks Justin Fields is amazing.
Yeah.
He says so out loud in front of a microphone. It therefore must be true.
Has to be.
The 49ers aren't even saying that.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
There needs to be more conversation around, I think, overwhelming positivity on the mic as a GM or coach. should not be taken with a grain of salt. But negativity or lack of positivity is really telling.
Absence of positivity.
Yeah, absence of positivity or outright negativity, like he stinks.
Yeah.
Like or go back to the Carson Wentz thing, where they're like, yeah, we probably shouldn't have picked that fifth-year option or whatever. It's like, oh, shit, he's toast. Like, they're definitely going to trade him.
Like, immediately. It was like, ooh.
Just because Brian Poles is saying the quarterback that they drafted in the first round of the previous year is really, really good and we want us to build around him does not mean as much as the Niners being Trey Lance.
That should be the expectation.
Yeah.
Right? If you have a quarterback.
The Giants have shown more praise on Daniel Jones than the Niners have on Trey Lance.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you have a quarterback that whatever, like, for better or worse, you are essentially stuck with this year, that guy should be getting praised and is in almost every single circumstance. If he isn't, that's a problem.
Now, I do think that there's maybe some opportunity to buy into the smokescreen season that the San Francisco 49ers like to have. Like, everyone thought they were going to go Mac Jones and they swoop in and go Trey Lance. Maybe they're like, hey, don't say anything about the kid, but he's actually awesome. Who knows?
Seattle.
I put everything, which might have been harsh, but I just don't like anything they have right now.
You gave them the Houston treatment.
I gave them the Houston treatment. The receiving corps is good. Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf.
This wasn't one of your two quarterback situations?
No.
Drew Lock is a fatal flaw?
No, it's Geno Smith. Geno Smith's the favorite to start right now.
Is he really?
I like Geno Smith. But, like, Uchenna Nwosu and Daryl Taylor, Shelby Harris, and Puna Ford are your defensive line. I don't think you're getting a lot of pressure. LJ Collar is probably not even going to start this year. Trey Brown, Sidney Jones, and Justin Coleman are your starting at corners. That's a huge concern. Offensive line is Charles Cross, Damian Lewis, Austin Blythe, Gabe Jackson, Abraham Lucas. Two rookies at bookend? No. Like, this team is bad. Like, really bad. Like, contending for the number one overall pick bad.
Yeah.
The quarterback is not their fatal flaw. It's everything else. And I don't think they win more than, like, 6 or 7 games next year.
If you were the owner, say, of Seattle, and you kind of looked like you had a chance to just take a step back, look at the roster right now, like, how badly has this been managed to get to here?
Well, they've drafted terribly at low value positions. I think it's more so that they've drafted low value positions than they have drafted terribly, but it's a combination of both.
Right. But, like, up until getting rid of Russell Wilson, it was like, oh, we're fine. Like, we're a playoff contending team because we got Russell Wilson. It's like, you have let this thing fall to rack and ruin because Russell Wilson could kind of hide it all.
Yeah.
And now as soon as you get rid of him, you take a step back. You're like, oh, God, look at the state of this.
Yeah.
And you can't fix it.
If they start Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas next year, I think there's discussion that it could be Stone Forsyth at right tackle over Abraham Lucas. But either way, it's rookie tackles. That's going to be tough, dude. That's going to be really tough.
Yeah. I mean, this is a team that has no business. They're not playing for this year.
No.
At least they shouldn't be. That's not good. You're right. Like, they have a Houston Texans caliber roster.
Agreed.
Yikes. Atlanta Falcons, NFC South.
I went offensive line here. And I really like how the Falcons have kind of approached this offseason. I don't hate a lot of the decisions that they've made. It's previous offseasons that have them in this position. Jake Matthews is great. Jalen Mayfield, I think, was the lowest graded guard in football last year. Matt Hennessy did not grade super well. Lindstrom and McGarry have also struggled. They didn't pick up McGarry's fifth-year option for that reason.
Lindstrom hasn't. Lindstrom's been good.
Lindstrom's been good?
Yeah.
I thought he didn't grade well.
No,
never mind. Lindstrom-Matthews, then. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. But the rest of this offensive line has not been great, specifically Cale McGarry and Jalen Mayfield. That combined with, obviously, they don't have Marcus Mariota is a stopgap solution. This team is going to be biting for the number one overall pick. But I think it's the offensive line that would be their fatal flaw.
I think it's still a front seven on defense, like Grady Jarrett and
no one else. Yeah.
Like, okay. They've added some players, you know, rookies are going to come in and make an impact. I really like the draft that they've had. I think they've added some players that should make a definite impact. Like Arnold Ebiketie should be really good, impact pass rusher for them. Guys like Troy Anderson could make a difference. I like what they've added. I just think that, like, that's a few years now of that defense falling to pieces, and I think they've done a reasonable job of putting some players in the secondary, but the front seven should still be a mess. Carolina.
I put Matt Rhule / Scott Fitterer.
Wow.
I don't
right to the top.
I don't like a lot of the decisions that they've made.
Even this offseason.
Even this offseason, it's been okay, right?
Because I think this offseason, other than the fact that they've... I mean, okay, this is a pretty big caveat, but other than the fact they still haven't got a quarterback, I actually like almost all the moves they've made this offseason.
No, this offseason, I think you could give, like, I think we were grading the offseasons, and I think I gave Carolina, like, an A. But it's the decisions before that have cost them. Like, they only had, going into the draft, one top 130 pick
right.
because of the trades they made with Sam Darnold and all that shit. Like, they have – and the Stephon Gilmore trade, who's not even on this team. C.J. Henderson trade, who's on it. But, like, I mean, it doesn't make a ton of sense, the moves that they made in previous offseasons. And I think that's what their fatal flaw is this year. Their offseason this season has been fine. Like, getting Ikem Ekwonu where they did, I thought was good. Extending D.J. Moore, I thought was a good contract. They have a good receiving core. Christian McCaffrey back healthy. I like Brian Burns. I like what they have in Jeremy Chinn and Dante Jackson. Even I'm higher on Dante Jackson than others. But the offensive line still is middling, and their quarterback stinks. And the reason for that is because Scott Fitter and Matt Rhule.
Yeah. I mean, they're a team where it's tough to look beyond the quarterback. I think they've done a decent job of trying to fix that offensive line. Because like a year ago, they went out there and they prioritized Cam Irving and Pat Elflein in free agency. And like, okay, well, that's just bad. Like, there's basically no scenario where those guys end up helping the team. It's just – it's bad process. It's bad talent identification. It's just bad.
Yeah.
This year, they get Austin Corbett, who should be a good quality starting guard. Not amazing. But they get Bradley Bozeman, again, could start at center and be fine. Like his track record is significantly better than Pat Elflein.
Yeah.
They get Ikem Ekwonu at the top of the draft, who's a lot of people's number one tackle on the board. Okay, growing pains year one, maybe might not be great right off the gate. But all of a sudden, you've got like – 4/5 of an offensive line that's reasonable because Taylor Moton at right tackle is legitimately good. That, I mean, that you've gone from 4/5 bad to 4/5 good potentially in one offseason. That's not bad work.
And the only reason, it goes back to the only reason that you're even souring on this team is because of the decision they made at quarterback. I mean, like, trading what they did for Sam Darnold and picking up his fifth-year option and paying him all that money was such an egregious decision that it's setting this team back significantly. Yeah. Significantly.
I mean,
and then even if it's Matt Corral this year who they drafted in the third round, I would forecast, and I don't know if there are betting odds available, that Matt Rhule is the first coach fired, and I think Fitterer goes too, because I don't think Sam Darnold or Matt Corral is going to win enough games for them, even with the roster that has improved this offseason, to give them their jobs.
It also feels like the way this offseason went, that it was very owner-influenced in terms of, we're not doing anything crazy to get you a quarterback that might be a Hail Mary attempt to keep everybody their job. Like, we're doing this properly.
They were smart by that, right? I think it would have been a short-term decision to go and grab quarterback.
Right, and the fact that they didn't or weren't able to do that feels to me like the owner is sort of saying, I mean, look, I'm not interested in saving your jobs. Like, I'm interested in the betterment of this football team.
Yeah.
So we're not doing anything crazy. I mean, quarterback is their problem.
Yeah.
But we said we wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So I think the corner group isn't great. J.C. Horn looked really good right away, but then got injured and missed most of his season. Like, we need him to come back and be the guy that he looked like he was going to be before he went down. C.J. Henderson is obviously a reclamation project already into a second team. Dante Jackson, you know, you said you're higher on him. Rashawn Melvin. Like, this is a group of corners that there's a world where they're okay. There's also a world where they're not.
Yeah.
And this secondary is getting kind of lit on fire.
And Brian Burns has to step up. Like, Brian Burns has to be, like, a legit pass rusher, because outside of him, there isn't a lot of good pass rushers. They did add Matt Ioannidis, who I think is an underrated interior pass rusher, but Itur Gross-Matos is going to have to step up opposite of Burns if Burns isn't going to be like a top five pass rush win rate type of guy. Can I break some news?
Yeah.
Adam Schefter reporting Packers and Pro Bowl cornerback Jair Alexander are finalizing a 4-year, $84 million extension, including $31 million in 2022 and a $30 million signing bonus, with a record for any defensive back in the history of the NFL. That is, he'll receive $42.5 million by March. Same, but like, that's cool to see him get it too.
And he had to play football to get his.
Yeah, that's right. True. It's a big deal. I just had to cover it.
Right. Good for them.
Good for them. We'll get to the Packers soon. But their fatal flaw is not Jair Alexander, one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL.
Absolutely not. New Orleans Saints.
What did I put here? I put interior offensive line.
Yeah.
I think their interior offensive line is bad. I was joking around with Eric Eager in the office, who does like a lot of really bad jokes. Like, he's a good bad joke guy. He's like Andres Pete, more like Andres Poop. And like, everyone in the office is laughing, but he's not far off. You know, Andres Pete is one of the lowest grade corners in the NFL last year. And Cesar Ruiz also struggled.
Yeah. Quietly, their interior offensive line has gotten
bad. And then you factor in Trevor Penning coming in to start at left tackle. I know I said interior offensive line, but that's some newness and also like a dramatic competition upgrade for Penning that could lead to some disaster. And the offensive line as a whole, like Penning, Pete, Ruiz are the three major concerns.
I don't understand Andres Pete, like as a
player.
I just don't understand his career, right? So he came in, he was a first round pick, number 13 overall.
And at Stanford,
we kind of liked, coming out of college. But he was a tackle. He was a left tackle at college. Ended up getting kicked inside the guard pretty early in his career. Like, the first couple of years were a tackle. And actually, he wasn't horrific at tackle. As soon as he moved into guard, it's been almost nothing but complete and total disaster. Let me read you the last few years of his career, PFF grade-wise. 2018, his first season where he really didn't play any left tackle at all, 47 snaps at left tackle, 39.8 grade. The next year, 49. The next year, 62. The next year, 52. So this has been, like, below average to terrible
every year. He had a 20.1 pass blocking grade last year.
Yes.
That's insane. It's one of the lowest of any player in the NFL.
But in that stretch, he got a big second contract. Like, in the midst of the terrible play, they handed him the bag and were like, great job, Andrews. And there are guys out there that say, like, he's a great left guard, I think just because he got given the big contract.
Yeah,
but, like, I don't understand why he got the money.
I don't either.
He hasn't been good.
He has not been good. Mickey Loomis just likes his guys, though.
Yeah.
Then you can go to, like, Cesar Ruiz. Cesar Ruiz in 2 years, 53.8 PFF grade 2020, 57.6 PFF grade in 2021. I think Eric McCoy as a rookie was really, really good and graded well at center.
I agree.
He's, he's solid. But those two guards and Penning, I mean, that's bad.
Cesar Ruiz not working out has been a real problem for this offensive line. The Ramczyk is great, arguably the best right tackle in the NFL. Penning, I think, will probably be okay year one, even if he isn't. I don't hate James Hurst starting in a pinch as a left tackle. I think he showed that he could do that if you need him to and be solid, which is enough. That interior trio, though, Pete probably isn't going to be good, below average. If Eric McCoy doesn't bounce back, Cesar Ruiz has been below average every time. All of a sudden, like, that's a different prospect when you have Drew Brees out there getting the ball rid quickly and can deal with that than it is Jameis Winston playing.
Yeah.
That, I agree with you. I don't think there's another real answer for the Saints. That is their Achilles.
Because I like their receiving core. Michael Thomas, Chris Olave, Jarvis Landry. Alvin Kamara obviously is a pass-catching back. I think it's a good football team. This offensive line is going to hold them back, though.
Deonte Hardy. You don't often see a guy change his surname.
Wait, who?
Deonte Hardy.
Is that Deonte Harris?
Yes.
He changed his surname to Hardy? Weird.
You don't often see that.
You don't.
But there it is.
Well, CD Deuce, but I don't think he officially changed it.
No.
He did?
Hardy did. I don't know about
Deuce?
Yeah. Tampa Bay.
This one's tough, man. Like, I don't have a big – I think they were my favorite offseason. A lot of that's luck
because
Tom Brady came back. Well, Tom Brady comes back and you're able to get Ryan Jensen back.
True.
You get Chris Godwin back. You get Carlton Davis on a nice deal. Leonard Fournette. Like, they were able to get a lot of people back as Brady came back. And then trading a fifth for Shaq Mason and getting Luke Getteke, the Central Michigan offensive tackle play. Like, they did a – I really like the Bucs GM, Jason Light. Like, he is a smart dude, man. Like, what – look at the secondary. Carlton Davis, Jabelle Dean, Sean Murphy Bunting, Antoine Winfield, and Logan Ryan. Phenomenal. I think the offensive line with Donovan Smith, Luke Getteke, Ryan Jensen, Shaq Mason, Tristan Wirfs, up there with the best. I like adding Russell Gage to this offense, too. As the wide receiver three.
Really like
Gage. This Buccaneers team is great. I put the fatal flaw, maybe, and this was my hardest one, even harder than the Bills, losing Bruce Arians. Like, maybe? I don't know. Like, I know it's going to be the same offense, but it has to have a factor. That can't be nothingness, right? I think losing Bruce Arians has to have some effect, but maybe it was holding them back. You hear those shit about Brady not liking Arians and stuff. I don't know.
Where are you on that? Do you think Brady was out there pulling the strings?
I 100% believe any conspiracy theory that involves Brady.
You're in the 25%
controlling something. You know what I mean? Like, if Brady is, if the conspiracy theory is Brady did something with his power, it's probably true. Like, I mean, because Brady could probably do whatever the fuck he wants. I mean, I think he literally has more power of the NFL than Roger Goodell. Like, I mean, he is the NFL.
What do you make of that deal that he just signed with Fox? $37.5 million a year to call games.
I think – so I have a theory on that too, because a lot of people are like, what are you talking – why are we overpaying people call games? People don't tune in for who call games. I think the NFL really, really cares about who is calling the games. Like, I think that when you're discussing these packages, right, when you're like, hey, we want these many Sunday night football games, Monday night football games, or these primetime games, it's – they care about who's calling it. And I think that gives Fox a lot of leverage in those negotiations, because the NFL is going to be like, oh – you guys got Brady? We could get Sunday Night Football with Brady. I'm not saying it. I'm not saying you're going to get tossed off, but like, it gives them way more leverage than it does if they just bring in someone else, right? And I saw a lot of fans. I don't know why I quote-tweeted fans, but I saw a lot of fans like, I listen to the game on mute. Like, I don't really care. I don't know why you're spending that much money. It's like, the NFL gives a shit. The NFL cares who's calling the games. And if you got Brady that could give you a Thursday night football maybe when this Amazon thing comes up, or it could give you Monday night football if, you know, ESPN ever loses leverage, because Fox is the one who's on the outside looking in.
Yeah.
They don't have the Super Bowl, right? They don't have Sunday night. They don't have Monday night. They don't have Thursday night.
They've got, I mean, they got two of the next Super Bowls.
No, yeah, yeah. They don't have the Super Bowl every year. Right. But like, I think they don't have any of the weekly primetime games.
Yeah.
That's bad. They need that. They want that. And Brady, I think, helps them get that.
Okay. All right. I just think it would be funny. I just think it would be funny if Brady, like, look, Brady, you know, greatest of all time quarterback. I just think it would be kind of funny if he stank.
100%.
As a
everyone's rooting for that.
If he came in, he was Jason Witten. Like, Jason Witten was so bad, he had to unretire just to get the hell out of the booth. You know what I mean? Just to save himself from his broadcasting career, he had to unretire to take another year of hits to the head to get to escape it. That's how bad he was.
Yeah.
If Brady was that bad, I think it would be funny. That's all I'm saying.
I think it would be funny. I mean, I think every person is rooting for Brady to fail at something. Because, like,
anything.
Yeah, it's just kind of screwed up how well he's hitting on life here.
To me, their fatal flaw might be, it's not like the front four is bad, but it's very concentrated now in Vita Vea and Shaq Barrett. Like, Joe Tryon-Shoyinka didn't do anything as a rookie. Dude's athletic, but the guy had actually a staggering lack of pressure when you consider how much he actually played. JPP, not there anymore. Ndamukong Suh, not there anymore. There's just all of a sudden, you're like, okay, this front four was beastly, but where did all the guys go? We kind of need somebody making an impact at some point, and it isn't there.
Yeah.
So that's mine. That's the NFC South wrapped up, which means it's time for a new ad.
Let's do it.
But this one's easy, because this one is Underdog Fantasy. The best place to play fantasy football this summer is Underdog Fantasy. Their Best Ball Mania tournament has $10 million in total prize money. And the best part is, you just draft your fantasy football team, and that's it. No waivers, no trades, no in-season management. That's the kind of lazy man's fantasy that I'm all for. I like that. Don't want to be doing it every week. Underdog gives you your best score each week of the season, and the highest score at the end of the year wins. The champion of Best Ball Mania last year drafted in June. So there's no time like the present to join Underdog and take your shot at a $1 million draft. Plus, Underdog is going to double your first deposit up to $100 when you sign up with the promo code PFF. Also, if you play 10 of those dollars using promo code PFF, you get a free PFF subscription. So what are you waiting for? Head to underdogfantasy.com or the App Store, play $10 with code PFF, and draft your Best Ball Mania team today. And support friend of the show, Josh Norris.
Yeah, he's a friend of the show.
Underdog guy.
He's a friend of everyone's show.
He is. He's a good friend.
He's a friend.
Friend, period. Friend, friend, Josh.
A lad.
NFC East, Dallas.
Dallas, what I have here. I put overall depth, which I think is a cop-out.
Very much so, yeah.
And then I also put the secondary, though. Trayvon Diggs, Anthony Brown, Jordan Lewis, and they have Jaron Curse and Malik Hooker on the two safety spots. Trayvon Diggs, as many turnovers he had last year, he also gave up a lot of yards. So did Anthony Brown. I think it's going to be a defense that's going to have to adjust to not having Randy Gregory as well. You know, opposite of DeMarcus Lawrence, you got Dorrance Armstrong there, which is going to put more pressure on that secondary to perform. I think it could be Dallas Cowboys team that needs to win a lot of shootouts to win. And I love Micah Parsons. I think he's one of the best defensive players in the NFL right now. And DeMarcus Lawrence, I think, is one of the more underrated defensive players. But still, I think defensively, this could be one that gives up some points.
I wonder if, I mean, we're not doing the quarterback thing, but I wonder if Dak Prescott can sustain like the high level of play he needs to the whole way.
Are you a Dak fader?
I think that Dak has been maybe the most sensitive quarterback in the NFL to the supporting cast around him. Like, when the supporting cast around Dak Prescott is elite, you get elite Dak Prescott. You only need to take one piece out for you to get non-elite Dak Prescott and just good Dak Prescott. And then the more pieces you take away, the worse the Dak Prescott you get is. So we've seen that he's capable of, you know, leading one of the best offenses in the NFL and putting up massive numbers and being incredible. We've also seen, like, how vulnerable that is to just all evaporating in an instant.
Yeah.
So that, I think, is a potential concern. I agree with you that their secondary is an issue. If you were putting money on it right now, what kind of season do you think Trayvon Diggs is going to have next year?
I think Trayvon Diggs is going to have a very similar season to last year.
Like, but he's not going to put up 11 picks because people don't.
Yeah, yeah. No, like, I don't know. But I think he's going to have at least five. Like, I think he's going to be like a five.
Right, but it's a hell of a difference between five and 11. You know what I mean?
I think it's going to be a good amount of turnovers and a good amount of yards given up again.
Because I think the narrative on him will completely change if he goes from 11 to 5 picks. and everything else stays the same.
Oh, yeah. Which is crazy. Six plays of a for a player that plays probably 1,000 snaps a year.
More.
It's going to change the opinion.
Completely change how people talk about
That's why Saxon picks to me are just so stupid. The fact that like defensive rookie of the year and defensive player of the year is like wholesale predicated on how many sacks you get or how many picks you get, which is like 1% of the plays you play in a season, is insane.
It's definitely stupid for sacks, I think, where pressure has like a material difference on, you know, quarterback performance and stuff. It's a little more understandable for interceptions for me, because turnovers are so important just from a wins and losses standpoint. So you can definitely construct the argument that says, look, if you get enough of these things, it does offset a bunch of bad
play. For sure, yeah. But purely from like a war like perspective.
But not even so for me, it's for like a, but how good is this guy? Like, it's more defensible.
You get a lot of turnovers without being great.
Yeah, it's more defensible when you use it to be like, well, this guy had a great season. Because those are huge plays that are bigger than anything else you can do. But it's like, but okay, but like, how sustainable is this, right?
I just spilled a lot of water on myself.
A lot?
Yeah.
Okay, that's good. I mean, I knew you'd spill some, but it wasn't until I saw the look in your face.
It's not great.
That I realized it was a lot. Okay, all right. Well, sorry, we powered through. We only got a few more left. New York Giants.
Giants. I did not go quarterback.
Good.
I went offensive line.
Still.
This offensive line needs Andrew Thomas to step up. He was good last year, but maintain that.
Yep.
I think they could be starting a rookie in Josh Azudu at left guard. John Feliciano could come over and play center for them. It's a new depth player for the Bills that's now going to start. And then Mark Lewinsky coming in at right guard, I think, is average. And then Evan Neal has to hit the ground running as well, playing right tackle. I think it's too much youth, too much newness to really be a non-flaw for this team in 2022. Yeah. I like a lot of the other things they have. The secondary would probably be my second concern, specifically corners, and Adoree Jackson, Aaron Robinson, and Darnay Holmes, but that offensive line I think could be in for a doozy.
They were in a tough spot. There were a few teams that needed to go into this offseason with like basically an entire offensive line to overhaul, and the Giants I think had the least like just money to play with of that group, so they were kind of like, well, we know we need to change some bodies, we can't actually afford to buy anybody in, so let's get, you know, Mark Lewinsky. And Mark Lewinsky should be a solid enough starter for them, but you know, when you need three of those guys, it's a problem. I think the offensive line for them, I think it's taking steps in the right direction. If Evan Neal is good in year one, that's a huge boost for them. Mm-hmm. But the chance of that interior trio being even average, I think, are pretty limited, which could cap everything. Could cap the play of Daniel Jones, how good everything else works. Yeah, I think I agree.
How long have you been in the United States now?
Summer of 2017. So what's that?
Same year I got to Cincy. I got here in May 2017. Your accent is gone.
Oh, it's
totally gone. Uh-huh. I haven't noticed it until we start talking. I feel like you sound nothing like you sounded when you first got here.
No, I didn't. It's disappeared.
That's
crazy. Completely changed.
Five years, it's different. Uh-huh. That's wild.
So I've had probably half a dozen different accents in my life. I'm one of these people that picks them up like really quickly, just depending on where I am. So we moved around
a lot. You're like Brian Kelly, the coach at LSU.
It doesn't go that quickly. Yeah. It takes a few months.
My family.
So we moved around a lot because my dad is a surgeon when I was a kid. And started off in Ireland, learned to talk in Ireland, got an Irish accent. Then we moved to America, England, blah, blah, blah. Came back to Ireland, eventually got my Irish accent back before I moved over here. Somebody found like an old home movie we had when I was like 4 years old or whatever. And so I had an Irish accent, but it was a different Irish accent to the one I had when I came back, despite like living within like half a square mile. Like I didn't move places to where the accent would be different, the same place, but had a different Irish accent both times.
I think if you went back though, so like you hung out with some of the lads in Ireland, I think you would lay it on thicker, right? I think you would assimilate a little bit.
So when you talk to somebody from that, a portion of it changes immediately.
For sure.
Like it's already more Irish, but it would take a year.
I kind of want to hear your thickest Irish accent.
I can't put them on. That's the ridiculous thing about it is I like pick them up. It'll change, but I can't like just fake it. I can't just do it.
All right. We've sidetracked too much. Go ahead.
To accent talk. Good. It was a good sidetrack though. We did the Giants, right? Philadelphia.
I have the front seven.
What?
Hassan Reddick, Brandon Graham, starts on the edge. I don't see them. Brandon Graham has been good, but I don't think he's going to be a top 10, top 12 pass rusher this upcoming season. Hassan Reddick either. And then still have worries about the linebacking core. I don't know when N'Kobe Dean's...
Look at the depth.
Huh?
Look at the depth.
They got depth, but I don't think they have premier talent starting.
But they rotate.
Yeah.
Always.
Okay, convince me on the front seven.
Just the depth. I mean, like, they've still got... Okay, Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham are not what they were, right? Those guys are declining forces. They're still reasonable players.
Mm-hmm.
Hassan Reddick may be a one-trick pony, but the one trick is pretty good. That guy's a legit speed rusher. Derek Barnett has been a bit of a disappointment. I'm not 100% sure why they brought him back, but, you know, rotational body. Josh Sweat has been okay in that kind of role. I just think they've got enough there between, like, that, what, five, six guys. Jordan Davis now, we get to see what he can be in the NFL. Can he be a better player, impact the pass? That's six. I'd be surprised if that was a problem.
The defensive line depth, I guess you've convinced me on. I still worry about off-ball linebacker. And
that's not even mentioning Javon Hargrave, Milton Williams.
Like,
I'd be surprised if that front seven was a problem.
Maybe I should pivot to the secondary. Avante Maddox, Zach McPherson after Darius Slay, I think is concerning. I think that... I mean, defensively, though, I just don't think they have a lot. I think they have depth. I don't think they have a lot of elite talent. Like, Darius Slay's probably... Who's the best player on defense for them? Slay?
Yeah.
And that, I think, is the concern.
That, I think, is fair. I mean, if you looked at their secondary and said, outside of Darius Slay, it's...
I'm pivoting my fatal flaw to lack of premium talent on defense.
There you go. I like that. I like that. I do think that front seven, though, could be really good. Okay, the pass rush, they're limited now. It's not like, what, 2017 Philadelphia, where they had a bunch of killers up there?
Yeah.
All of a sudden,
killers up there. I like it.
TJ Edwards is like a legit good player. Guy has...
You've always liked him.
Yeah. Well, he's always been good. Mm-hmm. He's got zero athleticism, like physical tools.
He can't move.
But he's a good player. And then you add N'Kobe Dean to that. If he hits, if he becomes the player we thought he was, and, you know, not the guy that slipped to the third round, all of a sudden that, like, is a front seven that can actually do some serious damage to people. It's just the back four. So, secondary for me.
I like the Eagles plus 275 to win the NFC East. I think that the Cowboys are the favorite at plus 110, but I think it's worth a flyer. Almost at 3-1, at plus 275, I think it's worth a flyer because I think they've gotten a lot better this offseason. I like their draft a ton, and I think Jalen Hurts, I like Jalen Hurts to take a small step forward. Even if it's small, you got A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith.
Like, that's the thing.
He was the 11th graded passer last year.
Right, but given what we said about Dallas of, like, how vulnerable they are to the thing wobbling if you take pieces away from Dak Prescott, and then even if Jalen Hurts doesn't get any better at all, you added A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
Like, if nothing changes other than you added A.J. Brown, that has the potential to propel them in that direction.
Agreed.
So, I'm with you. I think that's a good bet. And that's endorsed now by two bad bettors.
Yeah.
So that has
lovely
to be worth more.
Lovely.
NFC North, last division. Chicago.
Did we get to the Commanders?
No, you're right. Washington, last team.
The reason I wanted you to get to the Commanders is because I have an interesting take on their fatal flaw. It is their new branding.
Wow.
So,
okay.
Hear me out. I'm putting the tinfoil hat on.
Mm-hmm.
The Commanders era, they wanted to kick off with a bang. And I think it's led to some premature short-term decision-making, specifically at quarterback. Like, of all the quarterback moves this offseason, draft and free agency included, what was your least favorite?
The Wentz thing.
Has to be the Wentz thing. Like, especially when you saw Marcus Mariota get signed for what he did. Matt Ryan got traded for a third.
Yeah.
And they gave up a conditional second. Like, it could be a second-round pick they gave up for Carson Wentz. And I think it's because... Hear me out. Short-term decision-making. Hear me out. They go make this, like, ridiculous trade for Carson Wentz, and that just sets them so... I mean, that, like, puts them behind the eight ball. This was, like, a legitimately good football team. And then you look at the draft. I think they attack needs and did not attack high-value players. I like Jahan Dotson. I think he was overdrafted. I like Fedarian Mathis. I think he was overdrafted. I like Brian Robinson Jr. I think he was overdrafted. I just don't love the decision-making they made with the draft or this Carson Wentz trade, and I think they did it because they're trying to, you know, kick it off with a bang in the Commanders era, and it's the hot dog suit has pressured them into some bad decisions.
I can't believe that he had a suit like that ready to go.
Just disgusting.
Just generally. Like, I didn't have to go shopping for one. Just had that in the closet ready to jump out for the press conference. I don't think it was a reaction to the branding. I think that was a reaction to last season. Like, I loved their process a year ago, which was, we are not in a position to find an elite quarterback to this roster, whether in free agency, trade, the draft, we're not going to get one. So what do you do if you're not... But we have a good team. We think we can make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So you bring in Ryan Fitzpatrick, because Ryan Fitzpatrick over the last few years has played league average football. And if we get league average quarterback play, we can make the postseason and win some games. And then Ryan Fitzpatrick lasted like a handful of snaps where he got hurt. Heinicke didn't show the sort of Fitzpatrick Jr. play that we thought we were going to get out of him, and it was just bad. And they call it the other end of, you know, what happens when you face a bunch of good quarterbacks instead of bad quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Suddenly the defense is getting lit up. Like, so they just got terrible, terrible results out of what I think was actually a pretty good process. And their lesson from that was, well, let's junk the process.
Yeah.
And they went, well, we can't go into next season the same way. So what's the Wentz?
Yeah.
Grab Wentz. We've seen MVP play from that guy. We'll get it back again. At least it's an answer. And I think they just knee-jerked in the wrong direction and got Carson Wentz because of it. And then I agree with you. I hated their draft. I didn't like Jahan Dotson. So
really?
In addition to overdrafting him, if you did like him.
I like Jahan Dotson because he played bigger than he is. And like I like his ball skills a lot. I think you could argue he had some of the best ball skills in the class. I think the worry is he's small and he's not like a true, true burner. So I think he's a slot only in the NFL. And to draft him at 16 was when they did. It's absurd.
Yeah, I think he's a slot only at the NFL, and I just think the only things he excels at are kind of not replaceable skill set is the wrong word, because we talk about replacement level players, mm-hmm. like, but it's a skill set that you can get quite easily. Like, he has great hands, fine, but actually the way more important part of playing wide receiver in the NFL is being able to beat people to get open, to mm-hmm. get the ball in your direction in the first place. How good you are at actually snagging it once it gets there, it sounds stupid, but that's actually a much smaller part of the puzzle.
I agree.
Like, I would much rather take a guy that has vaguely questionable hands, but will get wide the hell open and can beat elite corners.
Danny Gray.
Than the opposite, right? A guy who has amazing hands, but may not actually be able to beat the guy standing in front of him.
Agreed.
So, yeah, I don't love what Washington did. My fatal flaw for them, though, I don't know if they fixed that defense from a year ago. Like, and I guess this is kind of almost contradicting myself of, like, I liked their process from a year ago, but William Jackson was bad.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now starting to have to go quite far into the past to find the last time that William Jackson was actually a plus player. And like, well, if that's your big money signing on defense to be your number one corner, number two and three, you know, Kendall Fuller, Benjamin St-Juste, like, this is a defense that got lit up last year. Have you figured out a way of not getting it lit up this year? Because I don't really see one.
No, I don't either. I mean, this Washington team is flawed in multiple ways. I think they were primed, man. They were primed. I liked what they were doing a year ago. Now I worry about them a lot.
Before we get into the last division we're going to cover, you can get 25% off any PFF subscription if you use the code NFLPOD. That's exclusive to this one. Austin's joining the opposition here, pushing our promo code, not his own. Which gives you all of PFF's locked article content, fantasy football rankings and projections coming soon, data and grades from the entire 2021 season, the upcoming 2022 season, all the stuff that's been archived for the NFL going back to 2006, and much, much more. Support the PFF NFL podcast and use promo code NFLPOD for 25% off any sub. All right, now we're on to the Chicago Bears.
Mm-hmm. I put the entire offense outside of Justin Fields. I think this offense is really, really bad. I don't like the receiving core with Mooney, Pringle, and Equanimeous St. Brown. I don't like the offensive line with Borum, Whitehair, Patrick, Mustafa, and Tevin Jenkins. It's bad. It's really bad.
Yeah.
I think they're going to suck next year. And I think Justin Fields is going to flash, but he's not going to be consistent enough to feel like wholesale confident about his ability in the year three. And the Bears are going to ultimately be picking inside the top three.
I really worry that they haven't even given themselves the ability to judge Justin Fields.
They haven't.
In this next
You shouldn't
year.
Worry. They haven't.
Right, but that's like they don't seem to be concerned by that, right? It's like, oh,
on the mic in front of everyone. Internally, I'm pretty sure they're concerned.
No, but I think whatever you feel about Justin Fields right now, right, I would want to know what he is next year. And I don't think you're even going to be able to tell what he is based off the season that we're about to have
for sure.
Because of what you put around.
A lot of that's the decisions that Pace made, right? I mean, Ryan Pace literally traded up for Justin
Fields. Oh, no, they were in a tough
spot. And they traded up for Tevin Jenkins, a custom pick.
Yeah.
Like, they did not. I think this was going to always be a shitty year. It sucks how shitty it was, still.
They were in a tough spot, but on the other hand, it still feels like he could have done more than go defense, and Velus Jones is your like one nod to Justin Fields late, you know, in the draft, third mm-hmm. round or whatever it was. I don't know. It feels to me that there's no way of getting this from where it is to, like, a good place in one off season.
No.
So you might as well, like, compartmentalize this and say, all right, let's try and, like, make sure Justin Fields survives year one. And even if he isn't good, We at least know that.
Yeah.
Like, at least that's been a fair evaluation of what he is, and then we can kick him to the curb next year and go after a different quarterback.
I wouldn't be surprised if the Bears are picking number one overall in 2022. Like, it's going to be really, really bad.
And I could see that.
What would be sweet about that is if they're still committed to Justin Fields, maybe they could trade down because another team's looking to come up for Stroud or whoever and allocate more picks and all whatever.
Right.
Because I think this Bears team has flaws in the receiving corps, the offensive line, defensive line, and in the secondary. Like, they need help across the board.
Yeah. They're a Seattle-level team where you look at it and you're like, I mean, it's everything, right?
Yeah.
The front seven is bad. There's a couple of players there that still exist. Roquan Smith, Robert Quinn, that can do some damage. Eddie Jackson, we've seen elite play out of him, but it was a while ago.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter, right? I mean, like, having elite play at a couple of these positions isn't going to matter if, like, the roster on average is really bad.
Yeah. So overall, I mean, they just need help everywhere. Detroit.
This is the only other team I put quarterback for.
Wow.
Jared Goff. I really like what Detroit is doing.
Yeah.
Detroit has got a coach that people believe in, a culture that the players are buying into, and they've done a phenomenal job at not breaking the bank in free agency and drafting really well. And I love what they've done investing in Penei Sewell. They bring in Aiden Hutchinson. They drafted Ali McNeil, Levi Muzurike. I liked the Okuda pick at the time. Like, and then even the trade-up for Jameson Williams was good. Like, I didn't hate what they gave up in return to go up and get Jameson Williams at 12. They added DJ Chark this offseason, not on a monster deal. I think it's a one-year contract. Like, again, they're not, like, you know, hamstringing themselves with long, bad multi-year contracts. Cough, cough, the Jags. This team, I think, is doing the rebuild right, so much that they're a quarterback away, I think, from not being Super Bowl competitive. But you put a quarterback here, and you have as much optimism about this team as a lot of the other teams in the NFL.
Where do you think – so this has obviously been a multi-year rebuild strategy from, like, the outset, right? They came in, they were like, okay, this is how long this is going to take. It's not going to happen year one. It's going to take – there's process. The thing that we criticize the Jags for, zero, like – you couldn't tell what they're trying to do at any given time.
Yeah.
Detroit, you can see every year what they're trying to do, right?
It's one of the few teams that's actually, like, nailed a multi-year rebuild to start, on paper.
Yeah, I think it's one of the few teams that's ever given the chance to do that and say, hey, look, this is going to take 3 years. Are you in with that? Because if you're not, we're not doing this. Like, anyway, where do you think the quarterback was supposed to come in this project?
This upcoming season. I mean, I think 2023 offseason, whether that's via a veteran,
because
we don't know which veterans come available in the offseason and all that stuff, or it's going and getting Stroud or Young or whoever you like in this 2023 class. And they did not give up a future first in that trade up for Jameson Williams. They should have the capital to move up if they like a guy, because I think they're going to win more games, more than six games.
Right.
So they won't be drafting number one overall, I don't think. And if they aren't, they might have to make a big push to go get a Bryce Young or a CJ Stroud, or they're a team that a veteran quarterback could look to move to.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think quarterback was supposed to come next year.
Because if it came this year, they have to pay Jared Goff, like, I think $30 million plus, whether he plays a down for them or plays all 17 games.
Yeah.
So they're still working to get him off the books after that trade.
Yeah, they were well positioned this year. It might have been a case of it could have come this year, but the quarterback class stank, so they just didn't want to go for it. To me, the fatal flaw, though, might be – so I love what they've done process-wise. But sometimes good process doesn't lead to good results, and we've seen that with the Eagles in recent years. Like, they've done a lot of things really well, and then it just all turned to crap for them, right? And they just didn't hit.
Yeah.
Love the fact that they drafted Alim McNeil, Onwuzurike, Aiden Hutchinson now as well, Okuda. Like, all these guys are the right players to have brought in. But they actually need to develop, particularly the defensive linemen, right? Onwuzurike, Alim McNeil, those guys had grades in the 40s to the 60s year one. Now, we know that those guys take multiple years to get to where they're supposed to be. That's why they drafted them first. But they need to get there. Like, if they don't take those steps forward, if they don't actually develop, if Aiden Hutchinson does have, like, a ceiling to his play that is lower than you want it to be, which is why the Jags drafted a Trayvon Walker. Like, that collection of moves, in order for this project to go where it needs to go, they need to be proved right about those guys down the line, right? And we don't, I'm not saying they will or they won't, but that has the potential to be a fatal flaw.
They're also, like, if they do get their quarterback or they are locking into their quarterback in 2023, they have a lot of money to spend this upcoming offseason. Like, if they want to upgrade in, like, any specific spot, like, they can go take.
But you got to, like, you've got to turn, you know, two players into one at that point.
Yeah,
it just becomes harder.
Yeah.
So that to me. But I agree with you. I love their process and what they've done so far. Green Bay.
I put the receiving core. I don't like it.
Don't like it.
Christian Watson was overdrafted, especially when you consider the trade-up. I don't like Alan Lazard as your wide receiver one. I think Sammy Watkins is the underrated piece here. Like, if Watkins is healthy and can play, I think he could be, like, good for them. But we'll see if he's healthy. We'll see if he can do that. Outside of that, man, it's, like, it's going to be difficult for an offense that, like, I think, literally targeted Davante Adams 35% of the time.
Yeah.
Is going to, like, pivot wholesale.
And that was still not enough.
And still, yeah, exactly. They could have targeted more. This offense, I don't think, is going to be that great. I don't think it's going to be that great to start. I think the receiving corps is going to need to iron itself out. Watkins being healthy, Watson hitting the ground running with some of the worst ball skills of any receiver in this class, like, that is concerning. And what doesn't get factored in enough is that Rodgers doesn't like rookies a lot. Like, I mean, I think he's going to target a lot of Lazard, a lot of Cobb, and potentially Watkins if he's starting. I don't think Watson is going to see a ton of target volume to start unless they just hit the ground running. The relationship's just surging. Shailen Woodley levels in the preseason. I just don't see it.
And it's not even just Watson. Like, all the guys that they brought in that you would think have the potential to make impacts in their receiving core, they're all new to Rodgers.
Yeah.
Right? So it's Watson. It's Romeo Doubs, who I think actually has the potential to be something in this offense. Sammy Watkins. Like, all those guys are new. Like, even Watkins, who we think could be – like,
yeah,
Rodgers doesn't know him.
Yeah.
So, and like, when you look at so many of those plays, like, Davante Adams is the best wide receiver in the NFL, best route runner, dude's amazing, great at everything. But when you look up and, like, the numbers that Rodgers has against single coverage, it's like an automatic green light.
Yeah.
Oh, one-on-one, boom, back shoulder, money, mm-hmm. right? He's now got to get that timing and that, like, precision down with guys he doesn't know.
I don't think he's going to.
Or Alan Lazard, who, you know,
has the offense has to be fundamentally different.
Like, yeah.
Fundamentally different.
This might be the worst wide receiver group in the NFL. It also might be bad enough that it does what the Patriots group did a few years ago, which makes everything else look worse.
Mm.
Like, all of a sudden, the offensive line might start to look terrible.
Because no one's creating separation.
Because Rodgers has to hold the ball because the offensive line, or because the receivers aren't getting open. And then Rodgers starts to look worse because there's nowhere to go, even when the pressure gets there. And all of a sudden, Rodgers is, like, panicking, getting sacked everywhere. Like,
throwaways, or the throwaways. Remember when he had, like, he broke the PFF record for throwaways in a season? I could see that a lot this year.
Yeah. So that receiver core might not just be bad enough to be, like, a fatal flaw for their championship, but, like, the ability to actually completely torpedo that offense.
Yikes.
Last team, Minnesota Vikings.
The Vikings. I put into your offensive line Ezra Cleveland, Garrett Bradbury, and they could be starting Ed Ingram, the rookie out of LSU. That is concerning. That is wildly concerning. Now, it could be Wyatt Davis over Ed Ingram. It could be Jesse Davis over Ed Ingram. Who knows? But, like, whoever is starting on the interior offensive line, I think, is going to be struggling. And even then, like, the tackles, I like Brian O'Neill. I like Christian Darrisaw. But I don't think they're elite, like, guaranteed playmakers on the bookends. This offensive line, I think, could be the fatal flaw for this team. Because I like a lot of the other things they have. Danielle Hunter and Za'Darius Smith on the edge. I like their interior defensive line with Dalvin Tomlinson and Harrison Phillips being added. Cornerback room with Peterson Booth and Chandon Sullivan, I think, is okay. Lewis Seen was one of my favorite picks on day one, even after the trade down. So I think this offensive line is going to have a microscope on it.
Yeah. I mean, I think for the Vikings, it's almost the same story every year. I think the offensive line, the interior, is still a problem. I do think, again, like the Dolphins line, it has the potential to get a little bit of a jump just from the different scheme coming in. Like, it might look better immediately just from this system. I also think that cornerback group, though, is still an issue. Like, Andrew Booth Jr., I really like him, his potential, but he's A, raw as a prospect, and B, a rookie corner. Like, that's just a bad combination straight away. Patrick Peterson is probably the best player there. Patrick Peterson wasn't good last year. Like, he was fine, the best corner they had, but not good. Cameron Dantzler maybe has the best potential of any of those guys, but keeps finding himself in the doghouse. Maybe that was just a Zimmer thing, or maybe that's just the kind of guy that he is. That's the kind of cornerback group that could be getting torched on a regular basis.
I think that the cornerback room on paper looks better than what it could be. Like, I think with Peterson and Booth, but I really liked Booth coming out. Where were you at on Booth?
I like Booth a lot. Mm-hmm. I think, really raw.
The injury is also
plays out of control. Like, I've never seen a corner on the ground as much as he was, but it feels like the kind of things that he was bad at, you can actually fix, like a coaching quick fix, because he's pretty new at the position. I loved his potential. Like, I think he would be the corner that I took after those top two guys, ahead of a Kyrie Elam or whatever. So,
how much more would you have liked the Vikings draft? And I like the Lewis Seen pick if they took Jameson Williams at 12.
I don't know if I would love it that much.
Really?
More. I mean, I love Jameson Williams as a player. Mm-hmm. I don't hate the process. My problem with the Vikings draft was that it's the same as any other draft they ever do, mm-hmm. right? It was just, where's the change from the Vikings period, generally?
Where's the flavor?
The board? Where's the direction that's somewhere different to the same course you've had for the last few years that's stalled, right? That's my issue with it. Not, And it's never like my issue with Spielman has never been like the specific players necessarily that he's targeted. It's like we're just not doing anything different here.
Yeah.
I like that. You tell me that you need to pee desperately, and then you start extending the podcast.
Yeah. I sent you a Slack. I was like, I need to pee.
So that'll do it for the PFF NFL podcast. That's been the fatal flaw for all 32 NFL teams. Big thank you to Austin Gale from the Tailgate. Go listen to the Tailgate as well. Steve, I think, is back on Thursday, so we'll have an intact PFF SP. NFL podcast for a little bit before I bounce on a road trip. That's it.
Thanks
you all for listening. Talk to you all on Thursday.